Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The inequities of New Orleans East jump off the page. Federal data shows people living here have less money, fewer grocery stores, more health problems, and life expectancies that are, by some estimates, a decade lower than their affluent neighbors in Lakeview. And now, there's a new form of disparity hitting New Orleans East, the coronavirus. As Tegan Wendland reports, this community has some of the highest infection rates in the entire country.
Rochelle Cook lives on Endeavor Court, a little dead-end road in a community off of Michoud Boulevard in New Orleans East, and she loves it out here.
It's quiet. It's very quiet.
She's a singer and a hairstylist. She grew up in the East and now lives with her disabled aunt, her 25-year-old daughter, and her 1-year-old granddaughter. They all support each other. But after she played a bunch of shows around Mardi Gras, Cook started feeling sick. She ended up hospitalized at Slidell Memorial for a week. Coronavirus, one of the first cases in Louisiana.
I thought I was going to die. I really thought I was going to die. I just cried. I lost it.
But she made it home, sent her family to the neighbor's house, and quarantined for 2 weeks. Now, they're all back together. But she has no idea when she'll have work again. And she's not alone. 20 of her friends have died.
I had to stop looking at Facebook because it just looks like an obituary. It's just one after the other, after the other, after the other.
A WWNO analysis of state health data revealed that the COVID-19 infection rate in New Orleans East is 4 times greater than the rest of the state. And if you drive around the area and talk to people, safely, everyone, it seems, has been affected in one way or another. At pharmacies, the dollar store, a food bank, a seafood place, a snowball stand, many New Orleans East residents told me that they'd lost someone or had been hospitalized themselves.
I would say emphatically that enough is not being done for New Orleans East.
Beverly Wright heads up the Deep South Center for Environmental Justice, and she lives in the East, in a nice community on Willow Drive, off of Morrison.
Our low-wage working population in New Orleans East in particular have really been hit hard by this COVID-19 virus.
Since Hurricane Katrina, more and more low-wage workers have been priced out of the city and moved to New Orleans East, where rent is cheaper. It's a vulnerable population, predominantly black and skewing lower income, with many essential workers who are forced to ride the bus to their jobs as grocery clerks, nurses, cooks, or servers. And they often come home to multi-generational households, like Rochelle Cook's, potentially infecting the whole family.
What I see is pretty heartbreaking. I see people walking to the gas station to get groceries, no mask on. I see people crowded in the bus shelters. You know they're not wealthy people. They are working because they have to work.
Her organization is starting an outreach effort to educate essential workers. But Takesha Davis says more needs to be done. She's the CEO of the New Orleans East Hospital, where they've tested over 1,000 people so far.
I do applaud our elected officials for the things that they have done to bring resources to New Orleans East. But if we really are going to create an equitable recovery, then we need to go to the places where there's more need.
She says the state should prioritize vulnerable populations by making them first in line for testing and giving free protective gear to essential workers. And the city has launched a mobile test site here, but she says more could be done. Davis is a native of the East herself. She went off to school at Harvard and came home to help her community. Now she's on Governor John Bel Edwards' COVID-19 Health Equity Task Force, which is looking into why a disproportionate number of black people are dying.
We've been under-resourced and undervaluing those who we are currently deeming essential for many, many years. So I am hoping that now that we're using that terminology, that we actually start to value their lives, not just the work that they do.
Councilwoman Cindy Nguyen is handing out 30,000 donated masks, but the population of the East is twice that. The councilwoman's also been delivering food and organizing food banks and online events, like a Mother's Day concert. She did not agree to an interview. Beverly Wright says it's not enough.
In this city, as other places, African Americans are not faring well. On all quality of life issues, we fare worse than do whites. for the longest time, that's just been a statement at the bottom of a paper.
She says the disparities highlighted by this pandemic should be a wake-up call for politicians, that Black Americans need better health care, better access to healthy food, and to be paid living wages. They need to be given the same opportunities as white children. Your zip code should not determine your health.
And until we absolutely begin investigating the causes of this and starting to make changes, this will never end.
Rochelle Cook is getting unemployment for now. And she recently got back on stage for the first time since she got sick for a socially distanced Facebook show. Underneath the video, the comment thread is full of heart and kiss emojis from friends and family. Their comments say, "Love you, welcome back, great to see you singing. Get it, cuz. Sing it, Ray." In New Orleans East, I'm Tegan Wendland.
Context of White Supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. So I have been told we're supposed to be in Toronto today. Moving forward, we spent a lot of time talking about New Orleans, Louisiana. Did some of our signature work on Hurricane Katrina. New Orleans East, New Orleans East was prominently featured in Katrina after the flood. Gary Rivlin, we read the book on the book club, and then he was a guest on the program after we finished all that up in 2015. But man. It sounded depressingly similar. Major tragedy. Then it was the levee failure, toxic flooding, terrorist whites, and New Orleans East left out of it. All these black people that live over here, and they're not included at all. They go to New Orleans and they just show the French Quarter painfully. So in fact, all the way down to the most minute details, and they talked about, oh, she's out a performer and what have you, and she's probably out maybe doing gigs close to the French Quarter and other sectors in the service economy, as they say in New Orleans. She talked about being there performing with Mardi Gras. Said that was a major error in all this when we were not taking things seriously and allowing large groups to get together and be all close and breathing on one another. Huge error. They said that's probably why areas like New Orleans East, New Orleans, have had big problems with the virus. But eerily similar to a lot of the things that we talked about 5 years ago with New Orleans. System of racism, white supremacy, you notice lots of those same patterns, lots of repetition, especially as it relates to black people being harmed. With all of that said, thought it would be grand to get one of our favorite guests back on the program. He certainly has medical expertise to help us process the current health crisis on the planet with COVID-19 within a context of white supremacy racism. He's been with us many times on the program. In fact, he was with us the night our current president was elected. We were doing this segment giving Dr. Welsing her kudos for predicting all of this. He was right there with us to observe that historic moment, and the reckoning continued. Four more years, the reckoning continues. But he was here for that. He was here with us to discuss some of his written work. You can check out his books. You can visit his website, Eyes of Ma'at. He has his books posted at the website, Reality Check and OMG, The President is Black. We've discussed both on the program before. We even had a listener who wrote me today asking about Reality Check and saying that they were not able to get their hands on it. So maybe he can help out with that as well. But always a hoot to have him on the program. We super appreciate him being so generous with his time, energy, and expertise over the years. We'll look forward to hearing from him this evening. And take advantage if you would like to ask a question, share a thought or two. You can also share the broadcast. Let folks know that we are broadcasting live Post us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all of the above. Share, let people know. I'll give out the number as we roll. Our guest, once again, Dr. Niana Rasayan. Dr. Rasayan, are you with us, sir?
Top of the day, my brother. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. You are crystal right now.
It's unfortunate that I'm coming to communicate with you guys once again, dealing with a rather unique kind of plague / pandemic, which looks like the Outer Limits in the Twilight Zone or an old classic zombie movie. But I'm here, and I'll just yield and allow you to direct the flow of the exchange, because logic clearly amplifies the sensitivity of the subject matter in light of the fact that we have, they tell us we have about 95,000 people that have expired in the U.S. alone directly related to this pandemic. But from a global perspective, that translates into somewhere between 28 and 29% of all of the people that have expired in the world have expired in the United States. And given that we only make up about 5% of the entire planet's population, that is an incredibly unique statistic and a distasteful metric to associate with COVID-19. In particular, with regard to the loss of life among melanin-dominant humans, it's absolutely mind-blowing. So I will yield and follow your flow in terms of the direction of our exchange.
For sure. Looking forward to it, sir. For listeners, I'm sure we have some newer listeners, I hope, who have missed out on some of your visits before. Anything that you would like to tell folks about who you are, the work that we do, the work that you do, before we get started?
The first thing I want to do is I want to clarify something that you shared and you alluded to, implying for the listener that may not know my background, may be inclined to think that I'm a medical doctor. I want to make that 100% clear. I am definitely not a medical doctor. I'm a PhD in behavior neuroscience and a master's degree in clinical psychology and undergraduate degrees training in biology and psychology. So I want to be very clear about that. I am not a medical doctor. I'm a behavioral neuroscientist by training. And a lot of my work deals with psychoneuroimmunology in terms of how the humans respond to collective stresses, and with specific regard to people of color. Unfortunately, that translates into a direct, strong correlation between the impact of institutional structural racism on our collective health. Any other detailed information people may be inclined to explore, they can readily find at my website, eyesofmayaat.com. That's EYESOFMAAT.com. That's it in a nutshell.
Eyesofmayaat.com. Thank you for the clarification, Dr. Niana Rasayan, not a medical doctor. Before we get to COVID-19, give folks the opportunity to ask any questions and what have you. I have a number of questions myself. And even just given what you just commented on about how racism, white supremacy impacts the health of melanin-dominant humans, black people, this is not directly related to COVID-19, but it is kind of, sort of. There was, or I guess I can even start with myself. I did a program just a few weeks back, and I wrote about it briefly online. I went to check my mailbox about 2 weeks ago, and it was daylight. I had a key, not a crowbar, my mailbox. And as I'm leaning over, getting out packages, a white man in a black SUV, he rolls up. I don't know this white fella. He gets out. He's wearing all black. He doesn't have on a badge or identify himself as an enforcement official, but he comes up to me at the mailbox and he says, "What are you doing? Do you live here? What's your name? What's going on here?" And I'm kind of startled by all of this. But like I said, he didn't identify himself as an enforcement officer, and I didn't know who he was, so I ignored him. I continue getting packages out of the mail, and he continues, "We've had a whole lot of crime in the neighborhood, man. Where are you going? Do you live here? Do you have a key?" I look at him. Call the police. Whole interaction changes from there. "Oh man, I'm just trying to look out. We've had a lot of, I'm just trying to look out for neighborhood safety." And all. Anyway, more details in the archives. You can go back and listen. But this just happened 2 weeks ago, just this month. So today, I look, and it's posted. You can check online. I shared it. Fox News Now. 11-year-old assaulted after being accused of stealing mail in Aiken County. I'm startled, so I scroll down. I look at the report. Family of an 11-year-old girl is taking legal action after they say she was assaulted and accused of stealing mail. Justin Bamberg from Bamberg Legal is the lawyer representing the family of 11-year-old Skylar Davis. Bamberg states that on May 11, Davis was accused of stealing mail and was assaulted. After reviewing the incident report, it was revealed that 38-year-old Elizabeth Shuri was cited with third-degree assault and battery. According to the grandmother of Davis, Davis and three other juveniles had checked the mail and were walking alone on White Marsh. That's it, White Marsh Drive. Davis told authorities at the time she was approached by Shuri in an aggressive manner. I know all about that. And Shuri demanded her mail back. Davis says she told Shuri that the mail in her hand did not belong to Shuri. According to Davis, Shuri attempted to grab the mail away from her and in the process grabbed her by the arms and pulled them. The incident states that Shuri was able to address the mail to see that it was not hers and let the 11-year-old Davis go. Shuri then apologized and offered Davis cookies to make it better. I did not get offered any cookies. I'm going to stop there. You can read the rest of the report. But I mentioned this first. I said it's not really related to COVID, but it is, because in the middle of all this COVID stuff, you've had white people protesting with guns frequently all over the country. Every day they've had reports about huge increase in sales of guns, just like when that no good Negro Obama was in the White House, and ammunition, not just guns, daily, in addition to all the, oh my goodness, am I going to lose my house or my job, and all the anxiety and stress, and am I going to get sick and die, and so you've had these reports every day, and then increasing numbers of incidents like what happened to this 11-year-old, what happened to Gus T, what's being reported in New York with enforcement of some of these social distancing laws. Just can you talk about how in this environment of stress and anxiety that these type of incidents where it ends up being aggression and violence targeting black people, why that should not be a surprise and should also be something that we take seriously?
Unfortunately, those specific incidents that you referenced regarding yourself and the 11-year-old, I don't have the details on the 11-year-old, but I have some general knowledge of how that young child was approached and how she was dealt with. And your situation just further illuminates the reality. And I believe it or not, those kinds of stressors are the most ignored factors that relate to comorbidity among people of color in the United States, also down in Brazil. I'm sure you recall, I think you did a program, that young Brazilian brother, about 21 to 23, how he pretty much got jerked around for wearing a mask in a store. They pulled up some kind of law. So the point that I want to make is this, my brother. I keep telling you, and I don't even like talking about this, but that is part of our reality. Hence that book, Reality Check. Melanin-dominant humans, it doesn't matter if you're a child. It doesn't matter if you're female or male. It doesn't matter if you are a celebrity or an unknown. The bottom line is the reality, according to Dr. Francis Quest Welsing and amplified by a number of other researchers. Sadly, our vanilla brothers and sisters, the collective mentality of Caucasians, has deteriorated so profoundly since we have the current occupant at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, that all of these misguided denizens masquerading as citizens of society, they seize every corner, every illusion of an opportunity to seize upon the rights of brown and black people throughout the United States. And so what happened to that young child is definitely not out of the ordinary. And what was going on in your case, the person was probably trying to provoke you to the degree that he could justify doing some type of bodily harm to you. Unfortunately, those things are part of dealing with the system of racism and white supremacy. And as you already know, and as many hundreds of thousands of people recognize who occupied the shores of the contiguous U.S. of A. Since the current occupant at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue has been in place, everything that you could imagine that occurred during the period of time that you would associate with the Deep South in the 50s and 60s is in our faces every day in the U.S. of A. And if you don't have a camera, you know, on site, or if someone isn't filming it, I suggest to you very strongly that those particular incidents go unreported unless there is loss of life, bodily harm, or need to file an official formal police report. That's just reality. And even though we're dealing with the micro virus, which is a pandemic, COVID-19, which is basically SARS-2 hyped up on steroids, that's where we live. And that's where people of color, when you started sharing your show, you highlighted some comorbidity factors. And comorbidity simply is a medical way or a social scientist way of talking about coexisting or pre-existing medical conditions that exacerbate or increase the likelihood of a person falling victim to a particular class of diseases and or entities that may adversely impact the body. That's where we live. So we cannot ignore that structural institutional racism is one side of the tri-pointed arrowhead that takes the lives of brown and black people throughout the U.S. of A. and all over this planet.
Context of white supremacy. Attempting to, that was my conclusion as well, that the suspected race soldier who approached me, I thought he was attempting to provoke a situation. Like I told folks before, I thought he might have been armed. I told folks in those type of situations, man, frequently I think they're trying to provoke a conflict. They want to show off that new gun, maybe use that new gun. We've had a lot of incidents like that before. The correct thing to do in those situations is to call the police, even if you think it's an 11-year-old. Oh, well, I'll call the enforcement officials and, you know, see if we can get all this sorted out, make sure I haven't made an error. Not, I'm going to go and shoot in the head, lock your stick. Practicing racism.
By the way, Doug,
yes, sir.
If I may just amplify and punctuate a point, as you are justifiably trying to honor the protocol that this society is supposed to make available to all citizens of the U.S. of A. and any people that are occupying the shores of the U.S. of A., your comment about calling the police. Unfortunately, even though I have a substantial amount of respect for those individuals in blue or khaki or gray or whatever jurisdiction color that they're wearing, I would submit to you that probably greater than 65 to 70% of the time when a person of color calls the police, even though they may clearly be in a situation that looks like that they're the ones that have been violated and compromised, a great deal of that interrogation narrative would probably come from those policemen asking if that Caucasian person is okay and or asking that Caucasian person exactly what occurred. I'm sure you recall we did a show about 4 years ago when there was an African-American man that had been accused of going into a household, stealing a child's iPad and whatever the kind of device that she had, and the policeman trained their weapons on him. They called a SWAT team out on him, and it was either a 4 or 6-year-old girl pretty much said that he wasn't the one.
Right. Her babysitters had done it.
Yeah, exactly. The babysitters had done it. So
what her white babysitters, I'm sorry. Her white babysitters had done it.
Structural and institutional racism is one of the primary factors that should be basically classified as comorbidity in terms of how it impacts brown and black people, because the level of stress, the torment, the likelihood of developing undiagnosed hypertension, strokes, cardiovascular disease, all those things are related to trying to navigate the system of racism and white supremacy. And beyond that, if you do not have the composure to be controlled when you are trying to engage the input of people that you may have called to support you, again, I submit to you, probably greater than 65 to 70% of the time, you become a double victim. the people that you call to help you out oftentimes invariably conclude that you are either the assailant or the person that has violated the law.
1,000% correct, Dr. Rossian. I totally have conceded that, hey, if they call the police, that might not necessarily be an improvement. It could just make things worse, and you could end up being tased, beaten, jailed, all of the above. Totally want that. And I'm certain there are many, many cases, not just the one that you referenced, which is super important because, yeah, the white teen, her babysitters, they were also children. If I remember correctly, they were in their teens who said, oh, yeah, we're going to loot this white family, and we'll blame it on the Negro. And almost got SWAT was called out and everything, like, man, woo. But anywho, context of white supremacy, Dr. Niana Rossian, not a medical doctor, much obliged. I'm sure we'll talk more about that case this weekend on the compensatory call-in, the 11-year-old, this coming weekend. But super important, white supremacy, Rick Andrew Young, that is the best quote that I've heard during this entire sad pandemic. Andrew Young, the sickness is white supremacy. All right. Number one, super important, and I'll give my reminder in. You can speak to us like we are six. There has been an appalling lack of logic from the very beginning of this whole tragic episode. And yes, if you can speak to us like we're six so that we can try as best we can to get a great understanding. The question, what is a virus? Because we have a number of folks who, you know, take the position that there's no such thing as a virus, including the coronavirus, and or that viruses do not cause illnesses. So question one, as though we are 6 years old, Allah to justice in her younger years, what is a virus, Dr. Rossian?
The first thing we should do is make it very clear that we're not talking about computer viruses, which would be malware, screw up the ability of your computer to function to do what it does, basically contaminate your system's ability to function properly, and invariably oftentimes cause your systems to like crash and overlap and become completely dysfunctional. And ironically, those are similar things that happen with the human virus. So I'll tell you what, and by the way, viruses are not just restricted to when I'm talking about humans. You can have viruses that also impact plants. So in a nutshell, the first thing that you need to understand is that there are trillions of viruses on this planet. I mean trillions, okay? And viruses literally exist to make more viruses. So what is a virus? In simple terms, it's a microscopic parasite that requires a host for replication to duplicate itself. And it's typically smaller than bacteria. So I don't want some of your listeners to assume that a parasite, which you can see easily on the regular microscope with probably less than 1,000 magnification. A virus is something that you need electron microscope to see so that you can magnify something hundreds of thousands of times or at least 10,000 of times. We're talking about nanometers, all right? Billionth of a meter in terms of size. So the common understanding of a virus that a lot of people can easily grasp would be something like the rhinovirus or the cold virus, all right? And viruses, they don't necessarily have to be colloidals or travel in the air or be aerosolic. You know, a virus can actually be a droplet or a particle. It can be something that you can actually touch and allow it to impact your body. Beyond that, viruses, they are so incredibly smart that they actually have a little set of garments that they wear. Just think of a virus as being, to illustrate my point, think of a virus as being, to illustrate it, let's say you have a grape, all right, a regular grape, and around that grape is a little skin. And that little skin is basically synonymous to a gelatinous or a slimy, spiky coat that's wrapped around the virus. And beneath that slimy coat is another little kind of like a colloidal or gelatinous capsule that encapsulates and it surrounds the virus. And in that virus can be a host of different types of genetic material, hence them being so entirely small. like rabies is a virus. Polio actually comes from a virus. And let's see, what else can I tell you? And everybody knows about Ebola. So the bottom line is, just think of something that's so incredibly small, it's microscopic. And when I'm talking about small, I'm talking about something that's at least 10 to 50,000 times smaller than a grain of salt. So you're not able to see it unless you have an electron microscope. And viruses that we would be concerned about would be the ones that would be detrimental to our health. So, I mean, that's just a foundation for it. We can talk about it specifically later in terms of, like, retroviruses versus certain types of viruses. We could talk about it specifically with a little bit more direction. But in a nutshell, that's what a virus is. You're not able to see it. It's invisible. It's microscopic. And matter of fact, some viruses are so nasty that viruses can actually eat up bacteria. And those are bacteriophage viruses. And phage means they actually eat the bacteria. They use the bacteria to make more themselves. I hope that helps. Does that help? Are you there? Did I lose you? Oh, my God. Did they cut us off? Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Am I being...
No. Oh, okay. Did we get cut off?
No, I think my audio wasn't coming in. I had unmuted myself and everything. I thought I was, you know, being right on time host, and my audio just wasn't in completely.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure that I didn't become redundant talking about viruses. Just think of them as being a lot smaller than bacteria. And I was trying to give you an example of a classic one, would be like the rhino or the cold virus. And then a nasty one like the Ebola or the Marburg. We can be specific as we move along, but that's pretty much what a virus is. And the viruses that we're talking about, they can actually get into your genome, which is basically your entire cellular matrix that makes you human. Whatever it is that makes you you, viruses have the ability to actually impact that. And I can tell you how they replicate a little later, depending upon the flow of the question.
Okay. Awesome foundation. I was saying, any of our listeners who, you know, say take the position that there's no such thing as a virus, you can feel free to call in. Ask your question. With the coronavirus specifically, what is your understanding of this virus? And I know you were sending, you know, reports that, you know, they have been talking about a pandemic like this for some time. The Times report back from 2017. What's your understanding of the coronavirus and how long, you know, this virus has been being talked about, studied? Uh-oh. Are you there, Dr. Rossian? Now we're not hearing you. Fascinating. It looks like he's still on the line. Dr. Rossian, are you with us? I can see my audio moving, so it looks like I'm being heard. Dr. Rossian, are you with us? We are not hearing you. If you can hear me, Dr. Rossian, we are not hearing you at all. Not hearing you at all. Still on the switchboard, but we are not nothing. Usual suspects. Let's see, if you can hear me, if you want to try hanging up and dialing back in, maybe we'll see if that works. But we're not hearing anything. No nothing, no audio, not hearing you at all, Dr. Rossian. Looks like I am still being heard. I see my sound meter moving just fine. Let's see. Okay. Looks like he will look out for him. Should be dialing back in. Context to white supremacy. I'll give out the number 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. There he is. Okay. Got you back, Dr. Rossian. Let's see. Can we hear you okay now?
Yeah, Gus. I'm on the other phone now.
Okay, we can hear you. Crystal clear, crystal clear. I don't know what happened.
Listen, I don't know when I dropped, but I'm calling you on. Remember I told you I had three different numbers I was going to call you on?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We had this before, people who
yeah, you know,
throughout the years.
Usual. Because they have a tendency to do that when we talk about this complex or this kind of material. So if it drops again, I'll ring you from another line and another phone, okay?
Yes, sir.
Now, what part did we not hear? We were talking about the coronavirus and SARS, which is Southern Acute Respiratory Syndrome. And they've been around for, I don't want to put a date on it in terms of time, but just think of them being around for, let's say, a couple of decades, okay? But we usually think of SARS when we think about the particular virus that they associated with the bird flu and things like that, all right? And they were talking about something, Southern Acute Respiratory Syndrome. And COVID-19 is basically another variant of that because of, are you there?
We can hear you. Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Okay. Because of how it impacts the respiratory system in particular, but I'm going to speak a little bit more detail to that momentarily in the terminology of SARS. COVID-19 is basically a form of SARS, i.e. Southern Acute Respiratory Syndrome. But it's a little bit more sophisticated and deleterious to human health than that. So coronavirus receives its name because of the spiky crown, the halo that shows up on an electron microscopy, like if you were to look at it. Just think about those little flowers that people used to blow. I think they were called daffodils, maybe, the little white thing. And if you blow them, they would kind of float off into the air.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the coronavirus, it actually has a crown when you look at it. And it's sort of like a file on electron microscope.
Your audio is going up and down, like it's not stable.
Are you there?
Your audio is not stable. It's going up and down.
Okay, 1 second. Is this better?
It's good right now. We'll see if it stays stable. But it's good right now. You're good right now. Yes, sir.
Well, I hope nobody is fooling around. And I tell you what, you probably can't call me, but if it drops again, I'll ring you from the other line. And unfortunately, this translates into a challenge with continuity. But the bottom line is the coronavirus gets its name because of its crown and because it has something like a halo that looks like it has little spikes on it. So it kind of creates, you there?
Yes, sir.
It's like it has a halo on it, like around a classic symbol for an angel. But imagine that halo having some cleats in it, like a pair of cleats for golf shoes or football shoes. But at the top of each cleat, peripheral, moving further away from the actual cellular structure of the virus, it looks like it has little spikes in it. And those little things can sort of like permeate, like if they were to go through a person's mucosa, like through your nasal passages or through your eyes and your mouth, then it would sort of like attach itself to you. And then it would find a way to replicate itself and duplicate itself in your body because this virus is not like the virus that we associate with AIDS, which was a retrovirus that dealt with things at that level. This particular virus literally goes into your genome, your entire cellular matrix, and it makes copies of itself. And as it's making copies of itself, it just overly excites all of the proteins in your body, and it's something called cytokines, or some people call them cytokines. And those things will tell your body to call immune cells to the table, like T cells, to come out to, like, figure out what's going on. And because those cytokines that are responding to the viral load that's in your body, it's like they're calling up a little group of miniature soldiers to go out and serve as sentinels to see what's going on. But those are killer cells. And the funny thing about it is this particular virus is so unique and so sophisticated that it overly excites the cellular matrix of your body. And so your body literally is having these random sites of inflammation throughout your body because it's almost like the soldiers run to the site to figure out what's going on, the T cells. And as soon as they get there to figure out what's going on, the cytokines that told them to come, they're running around trying to figure out what's going on so they can bump all into each other and create hell and havoc. And in so doing, they create inflammation. And wherever you have that cellular matrix of that weird war zone going on, whatever organ site in that body that's vulnerable or really busy, it becomes inflamed. And I'll pause and allow you to ask questions because I hope I didn't go off on a tangent. when I was telling you about corona, but I'm trying to tell you what it does when it gets inside of your body. And it doesn't just restrict itself to undermining the ability of the alveola or of your lungs to function. It can screw up every damn thing that it comes in contact with. It just so happens that the stories revolved around what was going on with the lungs, because the lungs were struggling trying to figure out how to deliver oxygenated blood to the body. And this is only my opinion, because I'm not a virologist. The statement that I'm about to make is clearly my opinion, because I'm not a virologist. And as a result of the lungs trying super hard to make things available to the body, but because they were already inflamed, you know, oxygen makes things burn. So that's probably one of the general explanations that explains why people's lungs couldn't function. They were inflamed. And so they would put people on respirators and give them oxygen while their lungs healed. And sometimes they even had to put people in comas so they could just breathe for them to minimize their lungs being active. But I may be getting a little too far ahead right now, but I just want you to know that corona is a nasty virus. And even though they're associated with Southern Acute Respiratory Syndrome, it does a number of other things throughout the host's body. So I'll just pause and allow you to redirect me, because you made it very clear to me not to get too technical, so that I could kind of simplify what we're discussing. And I don't profess to be a virologist, but I have a fundamental understanding of all these basic things that relate to microbiology from my general training in neuroanatomy and neurophysiology. So why don't I just be quiet and allow you to redirect me, because I may have lost my focus a little when we got disconnected.
Appreciate the patience. Sound is excellent and been right on point. Much obliged. And again, encourage listeners, if you have any questions about, you know, what we're talking about, if he's explaining something and it doesn't make sense, or you would like additional information, or you have a question, feel free. 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you have a question for Dr. Rasayan. Given what you've just shared about the coronavirus, what exactly about this virus would make people who have comorbidities, white supremacy, racism, being subject to that system being one, but what specifically about this virus would make people who have obesity or diabetes or hypertension, what would make folks with these particular types of ailments more susceptible to the coronavirus?
Okay, in a nutshell, let's use something like diabetes and high blood pressure and obesity combined. Oftentimes, typically, when a person is have been diagnosed with high blood pressure, there is a tremendous amount of wear and tear on the vascular system, you know, the veins and arteries in the body, in terms of their ability to be flexible. Also, there is a correlation between people that oftentimes have high blood pressure and occasionally the dietary practices that they embrace. And as a result of that, they may have a vascular system that's more prone for them to have thrombi, you know, like a little tissue or breakup of cells along those vascular pathways. They also may be more inclined to have emboli, or something to just be floating around in the blood that could lodge at a bifurcation or area where blood vessels come together and create something like a little triangle or a little highway or a wide intersection or things like that. And in addition to that, a person that may have diabetes, they may have general problems that relate to their peripheral system, you know, like what's happening with peripheral circulation, you know, with your feet. Sometimes diabetics may have problems with their eyes and things like that. Again, something, again, back relating to the vascular system, okay? And so given that the human requires oxygenated blood to do whatever human needs to do, and if you have a virus that's screwing up your ability for your cells to receive oxygen, then wherever those cells are in distress not receiving oxygen, you're going to have a number of things to go on. The body may think that that particular site is being compromised, and as a result, cytokines or the T cells jump on duty, those things that I mentioned to you earlier. Like, they're like sentinels. They run there to figure out what's going on. And if they run there, these T cells, if they run there and they can't figure out what's going on, then the cytokines, which are another class of little proteins that tell the T cells where to go and what to do. As a matter of fact, the most recent literature that was generated in April 2020 talks about something called a cytokine storm. And just think of cytokines as being little proteins that tell your immune system how to respond to a stressful event. A classic one would be that most people are aware of is when you catch a cold, or about to catch a cold, you may sneeze and you have a little inflammation, you have a runny nose, or you get a mosquito bite, and then you get something that looks like a little a mound of a welt there, and your skin becomes inflamed, so you scratch, and you scratch because you're itching there. And the capillaries are responding to what's happening with the cytokines where the blood is. So you have an inflammation there. So wherever you have inflammation, and back to things like diabetes and high blood pressure, just think of diabetes, high blood pressure, as being diffuse inflammation sites throughout your body. And wherever there are already diffuse sites of inflammation, those sites are vulnerable to have more cytokines or more immune activity to go there to try to figure out what's going on. And if you have those things going there to figure out what's going on in a stressful situation, your body also produces a hormone or a compound called cortisol, all right? And cortisol usually shows up when you're dealing with a lot of stress. Don't get me wrong, you need cortisol in certain amounts for healthy anxiety. And I'm trying my best not to make this technical, but the bottom line is this. So with something like this particular virus that can create inflammation in your body, depending upon where the viral load is concentrated, all right? And like when they told you about they had to put people on respirators because their lungs weren't working, and a lot of those people's lungs, imagine your lungs being like little miniaturized balloons, and they get in a good quality of air, and if they get in a good quality of air, that quality of air is made available to go to your hemoglobin, to your blood, so that you can deliver oxygenated blood throughout your body, all right? So wherever your body can't get oxygen, your body is stressed. Like the people have trouble with their kidneys, some people may have cardiac arrest, few people have had strokes, but also keep in mind inflammation. So if you have inflammation, you may have thrombi or cellular material to break off and attempt to go through an arterial bed or your venous system. And if, in fact, you've had a long-standing history of high blood pressure and or obesity, then that flow of traffic, meaning the blood and the oxygen going through those particular parts of your body, might get compromised. And wherever it gets compromised, that particular region of your body could seize and or become a little stressed. And as it becomes stressed, you may have a lot of activity in that particular region. And as you get that activity in that particular region, and if your immune system can't figure out why you have all that activity, what does it do? It calls in more sophisticated immune cells to try to figure out who should handle whatever's going on in this environment. In the meantime, those other little things that I told you called cytokines, they're already there trying to tell the immune system how to respond. But because they can't figure out what's going on, they run around like little Pac-Man in those old video games. And while they're running around like little Pac-Man in those video games, they're basically creating a storm that we would call like free radicals. So they're running all around, bumping into each other, so they're creating stress. And wherever you got all this stress going on at a cellular level, you have inflammation. And wherever you have inflammation, you have other cells come in, like people know about histamine, right? Antihistamine, you know, you get a runny nose, they take antihistamine. Certain particular compounds your body automatically produces because your body thinks that it needs those compounds. But if your body can't figure out why it needs those compounds, then the system can become a little erratic. And when things become erratic, I'm going to give you a concrete example, and I'm not stretching too far to say this. Let's say you're not getting enough oxygen to a major part of your body that your body needs. Your heart's going to try to work a little harder to get it there, okay? And if your heart can't figure out why the blood is attempting to pump, is not delivering the oxygen, the heart might beat faster. And if the heart is beating faster and it can't regulate its rhythm to delivering the oxygen, the heart might do what these people call have arrhythmia. And if it has arrhythmia, it might fibrillate. And if it fibrillates, you might wind up having a heart attack. You follow me? And if you've had a history of diabetes and obesity, it's also a likelihood, and high blood pressure, that you could also have a small stroke. You follow me? So this is an incredibly smart virus, but the irony of it is, the virus is so smart because the virus is using your immune system to turn on you. I'm going to give you a clear example of what I mean when I say use your immune system to turn on you. Let me see if I can't get this terminology straight. They have attempted to talk about what happens with the children. They've only recently begun to tell you about, let me get the terms right, because it's pediatric, and they have associated with something called the Kawasaki syndrome. Let me tell you what it is. It's called pediatric multisensory inflammatory syndrome. Think about that. Pediatric multisystem inflammatory syndrome, which in a nutshell simply means that we don't know what in the world is happening to the children, but there is severe inflammation that look like that particular disease that they used to associate with Asians called Kawasaki disease, all right? And because this PMIS, pediatric multisensory inflammatory syndrome, you know, you wind up with a quick fever. The kids may have problems with peripheral circulation. Their toes may change colors. They may get nauseated. They may get diarrhea. All kinds of things happen. And they tell you now that they are associating this pediatric multisensory inflammatory syndrome with COVID-19. Why am I digressing to tell you all that? I'm digressing to tell you that this disease has the ability to go into your body and basically wreak havoc on whatever system it's impacting. Now, I'll be quiet and allow you to redirect me because I don't want to say too much.
Context of white supremacy. We were just talking about Kawasaki disease, not pediatric multisensory inflammatory syndrome, but I am looking at that now. I do see some reports on that just now. Much obliged for the detail about the coronavirus and the virus, and specifically about the relationship to comorbidities. If folks have questions, feel free. I do see hands. Before I get to some of the hands, have you seen any reason, given the numbers, the statistics that they've come out with that seem to change pretty frequently, have you come across any reason to doubt the numbers, information that's being given, specifically the statistics about the disproportionate impact on black people? Any reason to doubt what's being reported?
Unfortunately, I'm inclined to think that it's been underreported. Okay? And I do recall early on there were some black people in probably late February thinking that type O blood was somehow going to serve as some kind of buffer or insulator for black people type O positive O negative blood. This is the way you can get the data on your own very easily. All right? Well, you might not be able to get it after I tell you how to get it, because they may come up with ways to make it difficult for you to get. But all you have to do on your own, pick any major city that has a population density and or so-called ghettos or urban environments where you find a lot of brown and black people. And once you've done that, check out the obituaries from 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. Just get a sample in any major city. For example, like New Orleans, Chicago, Houston, Detroit, you follow me? You can even pick out some of the, you can pick out New York City, okay? Mm-hmm. And when you pick those particular cities, as you look at the obituaries, you can determine in general whether or not the people had, it was a homicide or they lost a life in a car accident or whatever. And then when you look at that data, you will be able to determine like a hell of a lot more people expiring in 2020 from March through April to now compared to the people that passed at that exact same time in 2019 and 2018, okay? And you can also tease out in that data to literally find out who these people are. You get some general information on the age cohorts, right? So why am I telling you that? I think black people in the Twilight Zone, if they don't think that this virus is disproportionately impacting people of color. Wherever you hear statistics, they'll tell you. For example, let's say if you have 100 vanilla brothers and sisters that may expire, they may tell you, depending upon the jurisdiction of the city, take a place like Detroit or a place like New Orleans, all right? Or you may come up with the conclusion that, hey, you know, for every 10 Caucasians that pass,
there are 18 black people to pass, or brown and black people to pass. So you can get the date. I have no reason to doubt that this thing is disproportionately impacting people of color. And not only that, it sort of feeds into, well, I don't want to start getting into any kind of conspiracy theories, but it feeds into the general statistics of why they're explaining to you that so many people are passing, i.e. comorbidity factors, i.e. high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, all right? But the one thing that they oftentimes leave out is not having access to health care. A lot of Latinos wind up going to emergency room to care because they may not have the appropriate documentation to say that they don't want to run the risk of being deported. And a lot of black people may not have a decent health care HMO to sponsor them going to see or visit a doctor on a regular basis. So a lot of these people wind up getting their care in emergency rooms. And they go there because of structural and institutional racism, oftentimes putting them in an environment where they cannot have the kind of employment that would offer them the benefits of a decent or a health care plan. Are you following what I'm saying? So if you have a history of being compromised and neglected in terms of medical intervention, back to the terminology comorbidity factors, you may have any number of pre-existing so-called medical conditions that they will associate with your ethnic group rather than structural and institutional racism. The general language is, well, socioeconomic factors. Socioeconomic factors are directly related to, I'm not going to live in that zip code if you don't have this particular income. And if you don't have that income, you can't afford properties and or a flat in that particular zip code. And if you don't have a consistent ongoing income, chances are very likely that you may not have a decent health care plan. Are you following me? Now, in a private conversation, I may talk to you about some other things that I'm a little ambivalent about bringing about discussing in this forum. I hope that I'm answering your question.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I wanted to get in one more question before I get a few of our callers. We've had some people who have said that they see, or I guess two. I'll get two and then I get a caller. So question number one, there are a number or a few folks who've said that they think there's something deceptive or at least suspicious about them saying that this coronavirus is having a disproportionate impact on black people, and they said that they think there's something suspicious about the use of disproportionality as it relates to black people in general, like when they say that diabetes disproportionately impacts black people, or high blood pressure, because a lot of white people suffer from high blood pressure and diabetes, particularly in the South. They said that in a few reports about COVID-19, that a lot of white people, even in the South, have that problem. It's not like it's just a black disease, high blood pressure or diabetes. And even in the report that you sent me from the Public Health Insider, new analysis shows pronounced racial inequities among COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. This is talking about where I'm at, Seattle specifically. They write, while the total number of deaths from COVID-19 is highest amongst whites, the rate of death per 100,000 for Hispanic, Latinx, and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders is more than double that of whites. Black people are not doing quite as bad as those other groups in the Seattle area, so if that means anything, but still not as well as white people. But some folks have said, see there, white people are dying most. The highest number of deaths is amongst white people. But we're not thinking of this as a white disease. All the reports are, hey, it's disproportionately impacting black people. It's disproportionately impacting black people. Is there something erroneous about that? What's your response, Dr. Rossellon?
Again, and to be completely honest with you, because I would like to like embrace the metrics, and I understand you're talking about the Seattle region, but I wanted to be clear. That's why I made the reference to getting obituaries. I'll say this to you. During the Vietnam War, they told you they probably had a casualty count of probably, right at around 58,000 people. All of the veterans that I know tell me that those statistics were pretty much dampened down, meaning there was probably a lot more casualties than that. And also, when you start paying attention to the lethality or the mortality of people following MSN or CNN News, and you see what Johns Hopkins team, what they're reporting, you find that the data sets in terms of actually who's passing, you know, the numbers can be off anywhere from like 5 to 10,000 people. So back to you talking about the impact on Caucasian people come, I mean, vanilla brothers and sisters, and or brown and black people. I honestly cannot put my finger on anything that will allow me to literally say they're kind of running similarly when you start looking at comorbidity factors. And the reason why I'm not able to put my finger on it, and to be honest with you, is because I have not looked at that data in detail. But I also know enough about statistics how to determine and conclude how people make available to you the data and groups in such a manner that it'll be difficult for you to tease out that data. All right? And I would suggest, I'm not interested in doing studies per se, but I do believe that this particular virus is collectively across the U.S. survey, not in particular isolated areas where the population might be equally impacted based upon comorbidity factors. Like, everybody knows that vanilla people can wind up with diabetes and high blood pressure too, okay? And the reason why I'm skirting around this is because I want to be very careful and not allude to something that might sound like a conspiracy theory. But I am inclined to believe, based upon what the literature is saying, and anybody can look on their own, in Japan and in China, they have found that people that have had a severe bout with COVID-19, that they've also found that it's doing something to those people's sperm or the semen. All right. They also pointed out that clearly it's transmittable that way as well, all right? This is an article that was just released in April 2020, and I could make it available to you. So back to the actual breakdown of how many people are passing based upon ethnicity, I still believe that a disproportionate number of people of color are expiring due to this disease, whether that be directly related to them not having health care or winding up in the hospital late, because they've been telling a lot of brown and black people that they have bronchitis, go home and relax. You might have a severe, something that looks like the flu, and they don't get the kind of testing that they need to get. That's why I'm telling you these statistics are probably going to jump. And given that the way things are going on now in hospitals and the way people are having to deal with these loss of life relating to medical examiners, I think a lot of people are being rushed through the process, okay? And the reason why I think that is because, well, that's what the literature is saying. And that's what's happening, not just on CNN news, but when you look at pockets of news in other places, in places like Turkey, and places where you find Islamic countries where people are expiring. They aren't even able to do the classic rituals that they usually do when somebody passed away. You know how they bathe and cleanse the body. People are getting basically put together in mass graves in a lot of places on the planet. So what I'm saying is, I'm thinking that we're not going to have access to that data to probably about 10 years from now. And I don't need to tell you, when it comes to counting brown and black people, nobody really gives a damn about coming up with accurate data, but they are responding to the fact that some black politicians and some black activists are saying that they're having a lot of trouble getting access to PPEs and the medical intervention that they need. And even on a few quote-unquote reservations in the U.S., in particular the Navajo, you know, they may not have as many quote-unquote cases, but when they do contract COVID, they are more likely to expire from it. And my ability to speak to what's causing those accelerated expirations of people to actually expire from it, I'm not able to speak to unless I say something about access to medical intervention, number one, and then number two, undiagnosed medical conditions, and then all of that would go under the rubric of institutional structural racism. And so I still think, unfortunately, I'm trying to diplomatically say it without sounding like a conspiracy theorist. I'll just say this. If you have a strand of any virus and it literally can wipe out people based upon population density, and the likelihood of people expiring from it to be directly related to not having access to medical care and or history of not having access to medical care, then that creates an atmosphere in their body for that particular disease or that virus to be not only more deleterious but deadlier, because by the time they get intervention, they probably have already expired. But the unique thing about this virus, which makes me wonder about it jumping from animals to humans, it has the ability to kind of like mask itself. It's almost like you don't know you have it, until you have a severe manifestation of it. And by the time that happens, a lot of people are infected with it. And the more people that are infected with it, the more likelihood for it to be transmitted to other people. And the language that I'm concerned about is this. Pretty soon you may hear them talking about it being endemic versus a pandemic. And if it's endemic, that means that, well, we expect to see it again in another 6 months or 3 months. We're expected to see it disproportionately impact this particular group of people. So that means it will have a systematic effect to decimate large groups of people. And it's almost like we look at the body count and we talk like this. We're not even looking at, my God, the people may not have funerals. Oh, my God, the people might not even get a proper eulogy in general. They just may not even have access to the person. So we're not looking at that. We're looking at the number of people that are passing. And so my final statement is, I don't think America gives a damn about how many brown and black people pass, because I think she's still preoccupied with her whole thesis around population control. And I also think that we need to be acutely aware of when people start talking to you about we have a vaccine for it, because the most sophisticated vaccines that the human body makes, they're made inside the human body, and some of the most aggressive and advantageous interventions that have been made available for people that have had COVID-19 has come from something that they call convalescent plasma, which means they find the antigens in the bodies of the people that basically recouped or rebounded from the disease, and they're finding the antigens and antibodies in those people's plasma, and they're making their own special cocktail for the people, which means that the stuff that's taking care of the virus to some degree significantly is coming from the person. And so when they come up with their little vaccines and whoever's going to make money off of it and whoever's going to have access to it, I just have my general concerns about that. And I hope I didn't veer too much off on a tangent responding to your question. And if I did, like I used to tell you in the past, focus me and redirect me, because this is a very complex subject and it's laden with all kinds of undertones of politics and politics.
Henrietta Lacks, John Hopkins. My last question before we get to some of the folks who dialed in, there has also been a suspicion raised about the death count that they almost seem to brag about. You compared it to Vietnam, but people have said, hey, they have been pretty flagrant in saying that in terms of how they calculate the official COVID-19 death tally, and saying that they're going to be very well, one, it's not even consistent from country to country. It's not like they have one standard that's being used around the world. That's one that came up yesterday when we talked to our guest from Brazil. Two, was that, hey, in some place, we had one of our listeners in Chicago. He said that his partner is a medical professional. She observed them in Chicago taking someone who had a gunshot wound and died, and they listed that as COVID. They had other places where, hey, this person already had a pre-existing heart condition and they died, and they listed it as COVID. They don't know if the person had the coronavirus or not, but they do know long before this virus was here, they had a heart problem, where it's just seeming like there are lots of situations like that where, are they being truthful? Are they just taking, you know, people who've died in any type of situation and just, oh, it's the coronavirus. Like this person, you know, could have died from a car accident. Is that happening on a wide scale to inflate these numbers? What would be your response to that?
I would think that, unfortunately, that probably has some merit for two reasons. Reason why, again, back to me telling you, they're not going to really make the data clear. But let me tell you what that translates into in terms of outcome. That translates into very likely outcomes to lead to this. If we are being completely, totally misled in terms of mortality directly related to COVID-19, what do you think that will do to so-called educated people in terms of wanting to have access to a vaccine? It's like, put me in line. I need that vaccine because this crap will kill you. Okay. So that would be a benefit in terms of whoever has these, nefarious agendas to say, well, hey, like if we can make them think that blah, 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 they are definitely passing like flies to this particular virus. And as soon as we get a vaccine available, they will jump up in line and ready to get it. And the only reason I mention that is because several countries in Africa basically made it really clear. And that was even a thing running around in cyberspace on the internet about like, we are not going to be your guinea pigs for you to try your vaccine on us and we're not going to be in line to receive your vaccine. So back to my point, yes, that could very easily motivate people to say, if it's killing people like that, I want the vaccine. And there was a colleague that I know on Facebook, I won't call his name, but he said, quote, he said, Bill Gates is funding a lot of research for a vaccine to basically curtail and nip corona in the bud. And his comment was kind of humorous, but it had some relevance. He said, here is a guy that has made billions of dollars off of basically taking other people's software and then co-opting it as Microsoft, all right? So you may not know it, but by the way, multitasking and Windows and all those kinds of things used to belong to a computer company called Amiga, all right? Amiga was around, but they got bought out. Now, but his comment about Gates was this. Okay, you can't get rid of a computer virus, but we're going to trust you and your resources to fund somebody coming up with a vaccine to nip this virus in the bud. And so that thing just lit up in my head because it has a foundation of making sense out of it. And not only that, this guy has no background in virology or microbiology, but he has access to money. And because he has no background in virology and no background in immunology, why would people be so quick to jump in line and try? I'm only raising this as a general concern and an issue to point out what you said about some hospital physicians have pointed out that they wonder if they are classifying people that are expiring to be directly related to whatever the causal agent was, or are they stacking it all toward COVID-19? In addition to that, I also had access to some information from one of the main hospitals in New York. I won't even call the hospital name, but this particular doctor pointed out that they found a disproportionate number of loss of life when they put people on the ventilators, when they put them on a ventilator, versus them just giving them a little bit of oxygen and sort of like not putting them in a coma or anything like that, but putting them in a ventilator and slowing down the respiration, because one of the things that Kuvar does is it completely diminishes oxygen saturation, which means the oxygen that you need in your body for you not to faint. I have different organ failures, hence they give you oxygen, and then they give your lungs a break so that you can relax. So, again, I honestly don't know, pointing out again that I share with you clearly, I'm not a physician and really never had a desire to be a physician. That's not to knock them. But the point that I'm making is the people that I think could answer these questions are microbiologists and virologists. And a microbiologist does not have to be a medical doctor. You follow me? And I think they would be in a better position to tell you whether or not this particular virus targets certain groups of people. But I still agree that it disproportionately impacts people that have had pre-existing health conditions, and it also targets individuals that have marginal access to health care, and hence that unfortunately translates into brown and black people.
Context of white supremacy. Again, Dr. Niana Rasayan, not a medical doctor. We'll get to some of the folks who dialed in with questions. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. It seems like a significant number of the armed white hoodlums who've been out and about across the country protesting the shutdown orders, a sizable chunk of them have been saying that they're upset about the lockdowns and or they don't want a vaccine either. And there have been a number of reports that have talked about that has kind of conjoined the anti-vaccine folks and the anti-lockdown folks and the virus is a hoax folks have all kind of conjoined and the white supremacy folks. But it might be a tough sell to get a vaccine passed in certain parts. I don't know. The person who dialed in 1553, our caller in New Jersey, victim in New Jersey. Did you have a question for Dr. Rasayan? You should be with us, caller in New Jersey. Uh-oh, there it is.
Yeah, yes. Good evening, fellas. Man, everything that Dr. Rossian said is on point. And, I mean, I can and can basically testify as happening from the testing that first, you know, a friend of mine, like I told you, Gus, went to urgent care. They tested him. They said he was fine. He had a virus, but they didn't tell him what virus it was. And they just sent him home. Later, he was hospitalized, put on a ventilator, died at the age of 39. Dr. Rossian also spoke about no need for respirators. That same friend of mine who was put on a respirator and died, we strongly advised a friend of mine, his elderly father, because we had suspicions of these respirators. So we said, listen, I mean, we're not experts. We, like Dr. Rossian said, we're not doctors. But please let that respirator be a last result. His father is recovering and is soon to be on his way home. He basically advised the doc, the hospital, that he doesn't want a respirator. And if they are contemplating on putting him on a respirator, contact him immediately. And his father has recovered without the respirator. Dr. Rossian, I have a question. For the people who classify themselves as Black American, do you think it is appropriate that we distinguish ourselves, especially during this time, and separate ourselves from people of color and Black and brown? Especially during a time where our community is suffering from lack of resources, lack of data that's really tracking the true effects of COVID-19 on us. Do you think it's appropriate for us to push to separate ourselves from terms like minority, people of color, Black and brown?
Okay, if I understand your question, are you asking, do I think, A, we should remove the jargon, the lexicon that they're using to classify us, i.e. melanin-dominant people, into these other little groups? Or are you suggesting that we should kind of like keep our distance from people of color in general because of the incredible virulent, how the virus readily jumps from person to person? So are you asking about virus jumping from person to person based upon melanin dominance? Or are you talking about the language, the terminology that we use to classify ourselves?
Terminology, because normally when, you know, we say that, you know, there's some resources or there's mistreatment, we kind of, we're talking about Black people being affected, meaning Black people, Black Americans, but then it gets kind of like diluted with people of color, Black and brown, when clearly you can see that it is really Black people that's predominantly being affected in, you know, whether police brutality or the COVID-19. And do you think that we need to kind of like change that language just in the public as far as like public policy?
Oh, yeah. No, I totally understand your question now. Yeah, I think that unfortunately that has hurt us, because I even heard somebody talking about that dude that occupied 600 Pennsylvania Avenue. They were talking about what happens with Asians, and you can't classify Asians, even though they are our caramel or our golden complexion brothers and sisters. Now, when you're talking about Black people, melanin-dominant people, or melanin-dominant people type 4, type 5, which is you melanin-dominant, which means the blackest of brown Black people, that even includes so-called Black folks to consider themselves so-called high yellow. But as long as we're talking about Black people with the phenotype of Black folk with the stereotypical classic kinky hair, the nose, the lips, and in general, the dark skin or the brown skin and the brown eyes, I do think it's important that we generate a lexicon that makes it clear that we're talking about melanin-dominant humans versus melanin, marginally melanated people. Like if you were to talk about your Asian brothers and sisters, you follow what I'm saying? They don't have as much melanin as we do, but they can be kind of like golden to yellow, so to speak.
and the so-called, some of my Latino brothers and sisters, they don't have as much melanin as us either, right? So oftentimes you can even use the grade of hair, i.e. the texture of hair, because I'm not into that language. I want to be very clear. I'm not talking about good hair, bad hair. I'm talking about the texture of hair, hair that like lies down when it comes out of the scalp versus hair that coils when it comes out of the scalp. So I think it's important that we revisit that lexicon that you're saying. I think it's critically important that we do that. But let me share something with you. I've had students from Turkey, we call it Turkey. I've had students in the Middle East, and a lot of times when they come to the United States, if they cannot say they are Saudi or they can't say they are Asian, and if they identify another particular part of the Middle East, and when they come here, particularly Iranians, all right, they may tell them, when you record who you are, put white or Caucasian. And the reason why I say that to you is because what you're saying I think is critical. I think we need to polish up this lexicon, this jargon that we use to classify melanin-dominant people. That's why in my books I talk about melanin-dominant humans and melanin-recessive humans. And if I'm understanding your question correctly, I absolutely think that we need to tweak that lexicon. I think we need to define who we are as black people and as brown people, because even though in Puerto Rico you may find some guys, you may find some Cubans as well that might be golden-complected, and some of them might be brown, but when you're talking about black people, Dr. Francis Quest Wilson, well, how does it go? If you're white, you're all right. If you're yellow, you're mellow. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, get back. I think we need to be really clear about melanin-dominant people when we're talking about disparities in healthcare, and I think those groups should be broken out. And if you look at some of the data that talks about who's passing, particularly coming out of the boroughs in New York City, they will tell you that you had, which is not a true term, they'll say Hispanics, which is really not a true term. But when they're talking about Latino, Chicano brothers and sisters, and they're talking about black people, they break out the data. But I do think that we need to polish our own lexicon and our language when we identify melanin-dominant people. If I understood your question correctly, that's my position based upon what I thought I understood you to be asking.
Right. It's right on, because I don't, you know, it's not meaning to be divisive, but, you know, I just think, like, with data collection, and just the needs of black Americans, I think we kind of get lost up with that language, black, brown, people of color, minority, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah.
You ain't lying. When it comes to getting money, they definitely do it. They'll say, we got this grant to study people of color, or we got this grant to study so-called minorities. And you know, and Gus will tell you, black people and brown people are not the minorities on the planet. As a matter of fact, less than 11%, it might be 10% of people on the planet are basically melanin recessive Caucasian. We are the dominant group of people on this planet. That's a misnomer. It's a definite abuse of statistics and skewing the data to call black people and brown people minorities.
Okay. Hey Gus, I had a report that maybe you two would be interested in, if I can give, or I just leave it for another day and get you another caller.
We have other folks who dialed in.
Okay.
I don't know if you would like to email it maybe, or if we have enough time, we can circle back if you want to, you know, share a paragraph or whatever it is.
Yeah. No, actually, it'll fit in with workplace racism, so I'll call on Friday.
Awesome. Workplace racism, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, every Friday. Neutralizing workplace racism. Let's see. Much obliged, caller in New Jersey. Stay safe out there. Let's see. Our caller, 9029. Did you have a question for Dr. Rasayan?
Greetings. Greetings, Dr. Nasarayan. Gus, and greetings to everybody on the call. I have a few questions. One is in regards to the actual, like, sunlight and melanin. Due to the fact we have to, I'm based in New York City in the metropolitan area, and we have to stay in quite a bit, obviously. The thing is, getting sunlight right now is, you know, it's still critical for us as melanin-dominated people. So what I've been doing is taking steps outside to get more sunlight and as much as possible during the day in the morning. But could you suggest any supplements as well And do you have any other insight as far as books to look into in regards to melanin?
Yeah, I'll mention a book or two momentarily. Like, if you put my boy's name, my man down in Atlanta, Dr. Timothy Moore, if you were to Google Dr. Timothy Moore, M-O-O-R-E, he has a book called Melanin. All right, and if you put Timothy Moore in there and put melanin in your search engine, his two books are going to pop up about melanin. All right, and then Brother Laila Africa, who recently became an ancestor probably in the past 90 days, Laila Africa has a comprehensive book where he has a little short version book that talks about melanin, and you can find that book as well. And he has a whole comprehensive book about health that deals with melanin. And then I don't think Carol Barr's book goes into the details about melanin, but those two books are definitely critical books that tell you about melanin. And Tim's going to have two books out. And actually, there is a detailed section about melanin in my book, Reality Check, but it's just a whole section. It talks about the mysteries of melanin, and it tells you some other things about melanin too. But that's only probably about 35 pages in my 215-page-plus book to deal with Reality Check. It's about melanin. But back to what you just inquired about sunlight, you're 100% on point, brother. As a matter of fact, the UV, the light, one of the frequencies or the wavelengths of light that comes from the sun that people are always worried about getting sunburned and getting genetic damage done to their genes, actually is being used to actually sterilize equipment that's been not just exposed to viral material, but bacterial material in particular. Because I can't explain the particular nanometers or the wavelength in the UV spectrum and UV light, but they'll tell you the general language is talking about the black light, you know, that little light that we used to go in the club in the old days, and it would show you certain things. And it's also called a Woods lamp. And policemen and medical doctors use it to look at certain things because it shows stains and it makes things bioluminescent, okay? UV light has an indescribable, unique ability to kill viral particles and material. And I'm inclined to think that probably within the next 6 months to the next year, somebody's going to have some UV light that they're going to probably try to sell and tell people how you can basically sterilize all kinds of things with this UV light. Because UV light does do that. Because what UV light does to viral particles and bacteria is it actually damages at genetic level. It damages its DNA and its RNA. And so the UV light that's damaging the DNA, RNA, the DNA in any particular a cluster or a constellation of a cell or mass or bacteria or whatever, that UV light, I'm not exactly sure how it works, but it disrupts the electromagnetic wavelength of that wavelength of light. It damages the DNA in the viral material. So in other words, it keeps it from replicating. So back to your statement about sunlight, it's nothing on the planet like sunlight. Sunlight imbues light into your body. Now, having said that, vitamin D, as in duck, and I'm talking about... if you were to email me, I'll tell you the best sources of vitamin D. But you can get vitamin D, and it doesn't come from lanolin or the little fat that they get from sheep, all right? You can get vitamin D from something called lichen. I don't want to mispronounce it. Lichen is a special kind of fruit. It comes from a vegetable source. And, you know, you have vitamin D2 and vitamin D3. And the one that comes from animals usually comes from lanolin, which comes from sheep fat, all right? So adding vitamin D to your diet, D as in duck, with vitamin C, but add the vitamin C that's come from calcium ascorbate or an ester vitamin C, or there is a water-soluble vitamin C, and the name escapes me right here, lipovitamin C, which means it's like, it can go from point A to point B because it can sort of like hide itself in fat, so to speak. So vitamin D, and if you can't get a lot of sunlight, anytime the sun is on the horizon, you need to make your upper torso bare, really clean,
and allow it to bombard your upper torso with as much direct sunlight as you possibly can get. I'm talking about people of color in particular. All right? Because I don't know how much sunlight you get. I don't know which borough you live in New York, but I know there's not a lot of foliage in New York unless you're dancing around to the park or you're going to certain places. You feel me? And good air. Good air meaning air that's not filled with a lot of hydrocarbons, sulfur dioxide, and people's vehicles running around. Now, the other thing I want to say is you do know now, they've been pointing it out, that in environments they have had a lot of traffic, they've been able to see the horizon in certain places in China, like in Beijing, or like out in California, people could see the skyline. And before, there was so much smog in the air you couldn't see. And animals that typically will usually stay, you might say, in the forest out of sight, they're not coming out now because the air quality is different. So I mentioned air quality is because wherever you have good sunlight and you have foliage, you have more negative ions in the air. Okay? Foliage is critical, or like running water. And the negative ions in the air with the good oxygen, all right, and sunlight and that UV bombardment, believe it or not, viral particles have a lot of time staying intact. Not a lot of time. They're challenged to stay intact in those kind of environments. Are you following me? So does that help?
Yes, sir. I, one of the things I think is having plants in the household, I guess that's a good thing as well then.
Oh, absolutely. It's always good to have plants in your household. And if you're fortunate enough to be around someone that has a green thumb and they have a variety of plants that they keep hydrated, you're absolutely right. Because, I mean, if it weren't the plants, we wouldn't be here. You feel me? Because, I mean, they make the air breathable for us. So you're 100% correct.
Okay, okay. I have some more questions, but definitely.
Well, you can drop another one. Just one, mind. You go right ahead. Why don't you drop another one, brother? Because, I mean, I always need direction.
I'll leave that to the host.
Brother, Gus, you got these brothers so well lined up with Expedia Core and understanding protocol. So I'll just chill and let Gus do his thing.
Respect.
Thank you for your question, brother.
Still getting yes, a good amount of name calling. He was willing, sir, if you wanted to get in one more question before we get our next caller. Thank you for respecting the platform, I reckon. Much obliged.
Well, only thing I was going to inquire in was in regards to the effects for children that are actually now at home. And as an attempted parent right now, having my son at home is very difficult. And it's challenging to try to make sure he stays off of these electronic devices because I was fortunate enough to listen to a video that you did a while back, and you spoke in regards to the electronic devices and how children are being bombarded with them and constantly not being able to socialize. But now it's amplified, you know, and they're being pushed in the direction by the schools. And as a parent, as I'm fortunate enough to work from home, I have to really, you know, stay on top of that aspect. But I was just wondering if you had any suggestions in regards to that. You know, I have other things that I use my methods, but I wanted to hear anything that you might have.
You might tell me how old this youngster is?
Oh, yes, he's a teenager, 13.
Oh, yeah, brother, you got that testosterone, and the brain is beginning to basically, the brain is really growing now in ways that begin to plant the seeds for the frontal lobes. For, you know, the reason why I said that to you is because that's the last part of the brain to develop, the frontal lobes, but that's the part of the brain where people begin to learn how to start making decisions. And it doesn't even really mature until you're somewhere between around the age of 25 to 30, all right? So I don't know what your challenges are, but whatever it is that you know he likes to do or he once liked doing, if you had that kind of relationship with him, you need to make your interactions with him more interactive. And if there are protocol that you put in place, for example, like if you guys played any video games together, you might choose video games that require interaction, and you can anchor that on two things. A, we'll play video games for X amount of time, and this amount of time, Dad is going to challenge you to a few push-ups, or you're going to have to do this, or you're going to have to do that, all right? Something that I know kind of feeds the brain is little simple exercises, all right? Because you got to move around. If you don't move around, things don't happen right in your body. And I don't know how much space you got, it really doesn't matter. You can walk backwards, you can walk forward. You can come up with your own little exercise routine. I don't know whether or not you have any kind of equipment in your house,
But like downstairs, I mean, I have this very unique walker downstairs. I have a rowing device in my house. You follow me? But I keep in mind, I live out in the suburbs on top of Andrews Air Force Base. So, I mean, I can just get out and I can ride my bike, right? And if you anticipate having to be in a house a lot and you are concerned about those portable platforms, then you're going to have to do what men do. You're going to have to set some guidelines about, hey, if you play video games for X amount of time during the day, you have to do this for Y amount of time during the day, and you're going to also have to disengage him from certain video games. You might even choose an occasional movie that's interactive and quiz him about it and associate some kind of action or some kind of reward with him being able to engage in some kind of movement activity with you. You feel what I'm saying? Because my son, he doesn't do what I want him to do now. He's a lot older, but I could go in the front yard and play soccer with my kid, you know. But I'm not able to do that now because the kid is obviously a lot older. But I would engage some kind of physical activity proportionate to the amount of time that the youngster spent engaging in what I call those portable consoles or those digital devices. And that would be routine. It wouldn't be every now and then. It would be standard routine.
Yes, sir. Understood. Appreciate it.
Much obliged, good sir. Let's see. Henry in Chicago, previously mentioned. Question for Dr. Rossian. You should be with us, sir.
All right. Good evening, Gus, and good evening, Dr. Rossian. Two quick questions. One, when I talk to the COVID truthers, the people who don't believe that this virus is real or serious, the one thing they always say is, you know, well, the flu kills more people per year than this virus. Or this virus is just like the flu. Can you give your professional opinion on the differences between the flu and this COVID-19 virus? And secondly, you mentioned about the antibodies that some people have against this virus. Is there a way that this probably could be harvested? And would this probably maybe cause some sort of maybe some sort of form of body harvesting, you know, where they might be stealing these type of, you know, antibodies, you know, kind of like Henrietta Lacks or something like that. That's all.
Okay, well, you're going to have to revisit part of the question, but let me respond to the simple part first. I don't really have the data on the actual flu, but I do know that, I don't know, was it the Hong Kong flu? Probably around 68 to about 1970. You can easily Google it and look it up, even though I don't like the association with the geography of the place, but they called it the Hong Kong flu. And if you Google it, that's how you're going to find it. And the Hong Kong flu had to have over 900,000 to a million people plus to expire from it, all right? So in terms of people actually expiring from the flu, that probably is basically true, but the challenge is this. Those people that expire from the flu, the amount of time for loss of life is usually much more spread out over a year. And if, in fact, these statistics are reasonably true, for you to have, they say about 94,000 people. And if for you to have, and taking into consideration what Gus said about it might be skewing the data a little bit, but if you would have within 90 days, 80 to 90,000 people to expire, relating to a particular virus or viral strand, then that merits a serious conversation. And in particular, the way this particular virus takes people out, people have a level of resilience to deal with the flu. And if you were to break out the data on the people that pass from the flu, I always rub this in with my students. I'll say, how many people get flu shots? And then they'll say, well, this particular flu vaccine is effective 50% of the time. And my thesis is, would you jump out of a plane with a parachute that opens 50% of the time? And would you buy a car that actually cranks up 50% of the time? No. And would you buy a car that cranks up 70% of the time? Would you jump out of a plane with a parachute that opens 70% of the time? No. So the point that I'm trying to make is this. There is a word that the flu is based upon called influenza. And the word influenza actually means to influence. And your immune system has a level of sophistication to engage in certain strands of viruses that have been around for a long time.
They tell you that the COVID-19 or the SARS-CoV-2 virus is a novel virus. They said it was something about a bat and another animal, and it did this and it did that. Okay, the reason I said did this and it did that, they said it jumped to humans. So humans don't have anything in their immune system to actually fight this particular strain of the virus. So I would be particularly concerned about COVID-19 versus the flu, because the flu could make you ill, like I don't know what, but your chances of basically rebounding from the flu are dramatically increased versus your ability to rebound from the coronavirus, all right? So I wouldn't put those two types of data sets together, because I think we get lost when we start trying to compare metrics. This is like saying in a war zone, you expected to lose 65% of every platoon, and like maybe five people in the squad. You can expect two people to come back from the squad. But you know, that's a war zone, and you know what's happening. But for you to have a child or a person that's in their 30s or their 20s or their 40s that's in good health, to go to the hospital for something that looks like a flu or just a cold, and next thing you know, within 5 days, they expire, that's a totally different signature of death that's taking the lives of people. So I wouldn't compare those two with each other, all right? The other thing that I would alert people to is, unlike the flu, you're not going to be more likely to have respiratory or cardiac failure or kidney failure, and there are going to be more tools available for the doctors to try to offer you some type of intervention to help you navigate dealing with the flu, okay? So there's too many confounds in why people expire from the flu, so you're not able to just use the numbers of people that expire from the flu. The other thing that I want to say in terms of, you asked a question about, what was that part that you mentioned that kind of alludes to something like, oh, you talked about convalescent antigens or antibodies. You talked about plasma, whether or not they might decide to harvest it. Let's be clear about what the literature and what scientists are saying about that. What they are suggesting about that is they're saying that people have had a bout of COVID-19, and they had a severe bout of navigating the disease, and they survived. They are looking for the antigens or the antibodies in their plasma, all right? And they're going to tweak that with some things that they do in the laboratory, you know, to try to ideally make it, you know, as pure as possible before they give it to the next person. The reason why they are moving toward the plasma is because their plasma has created antigens or antibodies in your body that says what? You had a bad case of it and you survived it. And if you had a bad case of it and survived it, your immune system can be jump-started to recognize if you get exposed to the virus by them putting those antigens or antibodies into your body. And so when they put them into your body will, it's almost like the sentinels, i.e. your T cells in your body, or the so-called killer cells in your body, which run to the scene to handle something, all right, versus the I think it's basinophils, or the other immune cells that show up after you've had the fight. See, you have a group of cells that show up to engage in the battle, all right, and they handle what's going on the scene to fight the virus. And then as soon as they're taking care of the battlefield, another cell group comes up, and they sort of size up what's happening. And you might say they take pictures, or they collect the data, or they record the history of what happened. So if that virus shows up in your body again, they'll be able to do a high alert and nip the virus in the bud before it runs all over your body, all right? So you have these different classes of immune cells running around your body. So back to the convalescent plasma. The convalescent plasma, which they're getting from people that survived the COVID-19, I understand your point. Are they going to start trying to harvest stuff from these people? Back to Henrietta Lacks and the book that was written, Medical Apartheid. I don't put anything past these people, number one. Number two, I'm going to repeat that. I don't put anything past these people. Number three, I don't put anything past these people coming up with cures to take care of certain things and making it available to certain people. The movie with that brother, Cuba Gooding was in it. He was a helicopter pilot. Your brother would tell me the name of it in a little while.
Outbreak.
Yeah, Outbreak, okay. And in that movie, you found that they had a particular virus that looked like Ebola in it, and they let you know that apparently at some point military was doing some research around it, and they already had a cure for it, but they weren't going to make it available. So they just implied they were going to wipe out the whole damn village. So my point is this. I don't put anything past these people. The movie that was released in 2017 called Pandemic, and there was another one called Contagion. And if you look at those movies, you will see a lot of similarities in those movies. that relate to things that are going on now. And the other thing that I would say is when you start looking at, I don't know how to say it other than, if you go out on the streets, you from New York, I think you're from New York, you go out in the cities, in any major cities, man, it looks like a ghost town. You feel what I'm saying? So this is like a Twilight Zone or the Outer Limits movie. So I don't put anything past these people. The reason why I say I don't put anything past these people, because if they can make money off of it, they make money off of it. And if they can do some of those other more nefarious things that we know happen that we don't like to talk about, we do know now that one of the biggest stories that's being told on the planet today is they're worried about the planet not being able to sustain the population of human inhabitants by the year 2050. They said they expect to be 10.5 to 12 billion as in baby people on the planet. And they imply that the planet cannot sustain these people. So I don't put anything past these folks, brother, with regard to population control. I don't put anything past them. I just don't.
Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Much obliged, Henry in Chicago. It's listed online, the Hong Kong flu, 1968, between 1 million and 4 million people died by the time it was all said and done. Wow. They don't even talk about that, I don't think. The number again.
Yeah, they don't.
The number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. They had pictures of people wearing masks and such in response to the Hong Kong flu. I know folks have been furious about all that as this has been going on as well. What's your response to that? Because we have had some COWS listeners, a number of them, in fact, who are kind of leaning towards. They don't think the coronavirus situation is as serious, and they think the wearing masks is nonsense and the social distancing measures are ridiculous. Do you think that's something that we should be taking seriously, the mask wearing, social distancing?
You know, I don't know if the media stretched the story or played with the story or exaggerated the story or with sensationalism, but there were a couple of ministers that they had sort of like put before us in the news, and I honestly don't know whether or not it was sensationalism because I didn't contact the journalist in those jurisdictions to follow up. And I understand that this minister apparently had services, and he was talking about God this and God that, the whole nine yards, and he wound up getting, quote-unquote, at least we were told that he contracted COVID-19, he expired from it. And there was a media story that generated, I think it came out of either, maybe it came out of Detroit, it came out of Michigan, about the bus driver that somebody allegedly called for him and this occurred and so forth and so on, and he expired from it too. So in terms of me telling people to play what I call breathing roulette, it's kind of like if you were to walk into a neighborhood that was filled with a lot of garbage and pollutants. You can tell when you go into neighborhoods that don't have decent foliage or trees and circulation and things like that, because the air quality can change. Like if you were near a place that slaughtered animals or a place that actually manufactured tires from rubber. So the air quality would change dramatically versus you going to a beach in Waikiki or Maui and you're chilling out and you're just breathing that good air that's coming from the ocean. So back to your statement about people wearing masks, I honestly would not leave that up to the individual, because I call that breathing roulette. I call it breathing roulette. Is I would prefer to err on the side of just being precautious, even if the people are exaggerating the story. You feel me? It's not like guys that did, they worked in coal mines. They would take a bird down there with them, and if the bird expired, then they would know that you've got certain types of gases escaping in the coal mine. You need to get the hell out of there, or you need to put your breathers on and that kind of thing. I would be really concerned about that. I would also say to you that I wouldn't go in any environment that has people within 2 meters proximity engaging in any kind of animated conversations, right? Because they tell you about this thing being aerosolic.
has solid meaning. It's in the air, and it can linger in the air probably anywhere from about 3 to about 6 minutes before it settles if people are moving all around. And if you have orifice opening, like your nostrils are open, your eyes are open, I don't know about the mouth because you got amylase in your mouth and saliva, and you got digestive enzymes, so that might basically neutralize the virus. But stuff going into your nose and in your eyes, I would be cautious about that. And the reason I'm giving you this kind of answer is because breathing roulette, I would prefer to take the precautions and let somebody else show me the data a couple of years from now about what really occurred, rather than go out with the experiment of being bold, saying like, hey, you know, it's not going to get me, it's not going to get me, and that type of thing. Because if people don't know what the COVID-19 can do to a person, just think about you going swimming in some water, and the water is basically dirty, and it may have debris floating around in it, and a few man-of-war stinging jellyfish in it as well, and you're going swimming in that water, but you don't swim that well in deep water. So this crap can drown you, okay? And when I say it can drown you, there is no greater dread that humans fear than drowning and being burned alive. So if people want to play that kind of roulette with their bodies, that's their choice. I, for one, I think it's real, but I think it's real for other reasons than a lot of people may think. My reasons don't just go with the general flow of what's going on with microbiology and SARS-CoV-19. I have different views about why I think it's real. But I do believe that it's taking the lives of people disproportionately, specifically black and brown people. And I do believe that in particular, and if that's not happening, there's too many major hospitals and major cities, and I have a number of colleagues who are professionals that work in that arena, and a few nurses that are being overwhelmed by what's happening in some of these major cities that have a pronounced population densities. And so all those nurses, and I would prefer to have 4 nurses working on me than to have 1 medical doctor, okay? Because between those 4 nurses, they're going to figure out what the hell is going on, because they usually know their stuff, particularly nurses that work in intensive care, all right, and that may work in the emergency room. Why am I telling you this? I think people are playing breathing / life roulette if they don't take some of these things seriously, particularly if you're a person of color, because you're at greater risk of being misdiagnosed, number one. Number two, not receiving the appropriate medical intervention, number two. Number three, being the one that's least likely to have access to the kind of health care that you would need if you contracted anything that's either upper respiratory or anything that relates to any kind of blood condition or anything at all that would mandate your visit to an emergency room. I think you are least likely to receive the immediate care that you really need. And by the way, in New York, they came up with a protocol. I think they have a protocol. They might be doing it in Chicago. Like if the paramedics at the EMT team, if they make 2 efforts to revive you, and they said they try to revive you twice, then they basically are told to pronounce you. So that might be a confound that contributes to what you were saying about people passing from COVID-19, and it could be actually expired from heart failure. But the point is I wouldn't play with those metrics with my children. I wouldn't play with those metrics with my family. I wouldn't play with those metrics with anybody that I care for. And because I think I'm a valuable life form on this planet, I wouldn't play with that shit with myself.
Context of white supremacy. Take it seriously, and particularly using the logic of let's wait until we have all the data to be super sure. Like, even if you have some suspicions, everything is super beyond any doubt, no ambiguity, exactly what's happening. No, you don't need a mask. Everything is super safe. That is the type of logic that I like. Not playing roulette, breathing roulette with my life force, too valuable, particularly if you have, you know, parents, people that depend on you. But even you yourself, you might be the person that figures out how to solve the problem of white supremacy racism, or at least help us get there. We've also had some folks who have been doubtful about the hospital claims. I know we have folks in New York where they talked about for some period they had such a surge in deaths that they were having difficulty storing the bodies afterwards. We had some people who were doubtful about those claims. We had people who were doubtful about hospital staff being overwhelmed by COVID patients. You said you, although not a medical doctor, that you have been in touch with some of your colleagues. What have they been reporting?
To be frank with you, man, it's only three that I talk to on a regular basis. And one of my favorite colleagues has gone missing, and I don't know where the hell he is. He's gone missing. He's gone missing. All right? So I'm not going to tell you his name, but he's definitely gone missing. And he's a very articulate, he's just gone missing. But what I've been hearing, the main thing I've been hearing is that a lot of them had major concerns about having to use their protective masks and their gowns, what we call the PPEs, that they've only recently begun to get the kind of equipment that they need. I've been hearing that those ventilators in a number of cases are more harmful than they are good. And I've been hearing that a lot of them are kind of, I don't want to say worried. They're just drained. They're wiped out. And three in particular told me that they have never seen anything like this before. I even had a couple of my colleagues to tell me, affiliated with the military, said to me that this damn thing looked like a kind of an altitude sickness, you know, like when people do mountain climbing because of the way it deprives the body of oxygen. You follow me? Because, you know, that's one of the things that they check when they do your blood. They check your oxygen saturation levels. And if you talk to any medical doctor, he or she would tell you that's one of the main things they get concerned about, oxygen saturation levels. So they usually put people on oxygen. It's not just general routine. You go to the hospital, they give you oxygen, you know, like when something's going around your heart. Just keep in mind, your heart pumps blood, and your heart's living oxygenated blood, right? So they've been telling me they've been feeling overwhelmed. They are a little paranoid. They think that people should do more testing, you follow me? And they've been telling me that they recognize the fact that a lot of people that need intervention, particularly a couple of my colleagues in Detroit, pointed out that some of the people can't get to the facilities, you know, because if the public transportation isn't running the way it used to run and it's running at all these weird hours and stuff, and the assumption is that everybody that needs intervention, like these food lines that you've been seeing on television. So if this thing is not as bad as it is, yeah, it's really interesting to me why you find so many people, and then it could just be the panic, you know what I mean? People go buy the stuff out of the stores. But people are losing their jobs. And the reason why I think it's real is because I don't think the U.S. government is really, how should I say? I don't think they are flexible enough to let the economy flip around back and forth the way it's flip arounding by keeping this many people out of the workforce. Because people not working, people not spending money. People not spending money, they screw up the GDP in the U.S. And the U.S. is an incredibly large major business corporation. She's all about the business of making money, and she's not making money. Her stock's not selling, so she's tripping, all right? So that's another reason why I think it's real. And the other thing that I have to diplomatically touch on is you have to ask yourself, what's going to come next? Come next meaning what's going to happen when they say they got the vaccine? What will be some of the side effects of the vaccine? I'm sure you've seen those commercials on television. And this particular a medicinal compound that you can't get over the counter, you ask your doctor to prescribe it for you. It will definitely curtail your episodes of having your cancer to reoccur, but it's going to give you diarrhea, severe headaches, make you impotent, make you gain 40% more body mass than you had before, and give you crazy mood swings. But chances of your cancer coming back are diminished dramatically. So the point is, what the hell may be the side effects that may not be directly related to the quote-unquote vaccine? I think in those terms. So I also thinking, like, I don't want nobody giving me no injection of shit unless I comfortably choose to get it. I don't want nobody coming up with no guidelines saying, well, everybody living in this particular jurisdiction that has population density of X amount of people per square mile, they need to take this particular compound in order to return to schools. I have problems with that. Injecting anything into me. So I think along those lines. And I also think that you can never trust the data
that you get from the government about anything that impacts black and brown people in the world. I can't recall one incident where they ever told the truth. Not one time. Hence the book, for The Secret Life of Amir Alex, or the book Medical Apartheid. We find out stuff a generation later, 4 decades later. So what would make me think they're going to tell me the truth about what's happening to melanin-dominant people? That's just common sense. That is just fundamental common sense. And I'm not trying to spook anybody and come up with any conspiracy theory. I'm just simply saying, if you think about something, if people know you're going to be ill and compromised because you don't get medical care, do you think they give a blank about you getting well? One of the stories they're pushing now is, well, the real people that are keeping us healthy are the people that work in the little stores that make available their, put their lives on the line to do X, Y, and Z. They are essential employees, but they get paid the least amount of money. You hear what I'm saying? And the real people that are really putting in the hours to, like, try to nurse people back to health in the hospitals are the nurses. That doesn't mean the doctors are not working, too. I'm not implying that. But when it comes to, like, monitoring you and being on top of what's going on with you, hey, we don't have that many medical doctors running around, but we got nurses. We don't even have enough of them. So I think that this is going to, let me just stop talking right now because I want to tell you a metaphysical perspective that I have a little later, but I want to amplify this one point before I forget. I think it's a shorter wavelength of UV light that damages genetic material, and the UV light that people are talking about that can kill bacteria and stuff like that. I also think that this is the, they try to tell people to stay away from UV light to sterilize their hands or something like that because UV light can actually damage the skin cells in your body. But I don't know this for a fact, but I do know that melanin-dominant people can tolerate sunlight a lot better than my vanilla brothers and sisters can without putting on sunblock 15 and sunblock 25. And when the brother asked that question earlier about access to sunlight, I also know that sunlight can purify a lot of things in general, and sunlight is healing. Fresh air is healing. Hence, when you go to the hospital, they try to give you oxygen, and fresh air is a hell of a lot better than the air that's coming around floating in your house through whatever kind of system you have in your house. And by the way, people don't think about this, but if you're behind sitting up in front of your damn television in a bunch of synthetic clothing, your body can't breathe that well and you're not moving around, then you're not helping your immune system do what your immune system needs to do. So why don't I shut up and allow you to make your comments or questions, because I don't want to go off on a tangent any more than I perhaps have already done so.
Context of White Supremacy, Dr. Niana Rasayan. You can check his website, eyesofmaat.com. eyesofmaat.com. One of the things that I thought has been really important about this, just trying to pay attention globally, we can do our really soft brag, still a victim. So just since Friday, today's Wednesday, so not even a full week, Friday we had our black male listener with us from China. This past Sunday we had our Global Sunday Talk. Our folks joined us from London. Yesterday we had our caller join us from Brazil, Marquise Treve, journalist down there. Trying to triangulate, get information from across the globe to try to get a handle on the situation. I do try to remind folks, I'm not aware of any so-called country in the world that has taken the position that there is no Rona and they're not going to take any, you know, restrictions or guidelines or anything to try to curtail this. I'm not aware of any location on the planet. But anywho, when we talked to Mr. Treve yesterday in Brazil, he compared President Bolsonaro in Brazil to Donald Trump, and even the way that the pandemic has been handled in these two locations, which are now respectively ranked one. I haven't looked at the data, but it might be 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 in terms of total COVID-19 cases in the world. And I have pointed out that it just so happens these two locations also have the highest population of black people in the Western Hemisphere, in addition to the highest population of COVID-19 cases in the Western Hemisphere. And they have both kind of managed this, where President Bolsonaro has been out doing push-ups and saying we're not shutting the economy down and we're not doing the social distancing. Kind of very similar to some of the things Donald Trump has said, his same type of attitude, not wearing a mask and, you know, we're getting our economy back together and supporting the protesters. I've said consistently that, wow, if you have the data that this is going to have a really big impact on black people, that, yeah, you'll have some white people die too, but, hey, you always have sacrifices in war. But if you know it's going to impact a lot of black people, oh, man, yeah, we don't need to take this serious. We can have a really, you know, illogical response, tell people to drink bleach and not be serious in terms of let's preserve life and make sure that we do this in a correct manner. Does that seem to make sense, to take this reckless in an area where you know this is going to impact a lot of black people in a really harmful manner?
You know, what you just said, for example, even you alluded to one of the most, everybody knows, you can't even identify the most saying nonsensical comment coming from the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue now, because that guy has said some stuff that make you wonder if he doesn't have like diffuse brain damage. Okay. But what's happening in Brazil, and you've had people discussing it. This is why I say to you, what will make you think that it's not something going on if there are places that are in control over the lives of a lot of the black folk that are disenfranchised? They have the least access to health care, and they are also particularly dependent upon population density. You have more diagnosed cases of people actually saying Rona is on the scene. So what would make you think that the people care about your longevity and your quality of life if they are identifying places and they say to you, well, you got more people here with the disease, you got more people here dying from the disease? And just ask yourself a fundamental question. If these statistics are true, if they are true, I started out, we make up about 5% of the planet's population, about 4.8 to be exact. And then we got like 28 to 29% of the mortality directly related to COVID-19. And we have about 30% of the cases, at least 30% of the diagnosed cases are in the United States. What does that say to you? Okay, why is the country that supposedly has one of the most advanced healthcare systems on the planet, exception of that it does not give free healthcare, but in terms of the technology, the tools, and all that kind of crap and access, why would we have more people passing away? And whether you believe it or not, why is it a disproportionate number of melanin-dominant people expiring from the actual virus? And when you made a comment about Brazil, why did that guy make the same comment in Brazil that a brother could make out of any major city in Washington, D.C.? Or not Washington, D.C., but in the United States of America. I don't want to wear a mask, because if I wear a mask going into a store, somebody might assume that I'm there to do something that I should not be doing, something, some kind of crime. And like you said, you're going to the mailbox or something, and here comes some stranger showing up with you. Can you imagine what people are going through in places where they have open carry? Open carry doesn't mean you and I can openly carry. Open carry means that if we do openly carry, we better be walking around like we got on a three-piece suit, or we either FBI or something like that. But if a regular dude walks around the state, this open carry, and he's darker than me, and he's 6'2 like I am, hey, man, you know damn well that ain't nothing but a cocktail to say we were in fear of our lives. Because you could just turn around and say, you know, I got a license to carry. And by the time you turn and say I have a license to carry this, body mask, policeman, and dropped a couple of rounds on your upper torso. Because people are paranoid. And I don't need to tell you, folk are using this as carte blanche access, white card access, to terrorize and do stuff to not just black people, but anybody that doesn't look like a regular Euro-American. Asians been catching hell. The Latino Chicano brothers have been catching hell. They're catching hell, man. And if you catch hell that way, what does that say about institutional structural racism being in place to literally marginalize you and basically say that you are not, your life is not even worth saving? And these are my opinions. And you go into a big store, suppose you and I, Neiman Marcus, not open now. Suppose there was a high-end store like you take Whole Foods Market. I guarantee you, if you sent four black guys in that store and masked together, they could be fraternity brothers. You know, they could be Alpha or Kappa or Sigma, whatever they could be. They could roll in there together. They could all have on masks. I guarantee you, somebody in that store, it might even be a brown or black person. Wait a minute. We've never seen three or more black men come in the store together in a mask. Maybe they're not in here concerned about COVID-19. Maybe they're coming in here to rob us. I'm not being paranoid. I'm talking about what's real, man. This is real talk. So whatever people believe, they choose to believe what they want to believe. I don't believe the numbers. I think that they're inaccurate. But I do believe that people of color are losing their lives to this particular virus. And I told you a way that you can check. Check out obituaries 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. Look from mid-February up to the middle of May. You can even do 18 to 19 and look at 2020 and see what the particular obituaries are, who's passing. And then you start looking at cohorts of age groups, then you can say, wait a minute, you ain't got that many heart attacks dropping people between the ages of 35 and 45 of color. You ain't got that many Native Americans that passed because they had a problem on the reservation because of diabetes. What's going on? So again, and if we had an underground network that we could talk freely, and I wasn't concerned about some of our relatives that might have government jobs, they're not worried about me, I would put a whole nother spin on this conversation. But I'll say this to you. Play breath roulette if you want to. I'm playing breathing roulette today. I'm going into a store where it's a bunch of people in there pumped up, yelling, hanging out, having fun. Hey, there was a weird program that's come on television when I was a little kid called This Is Your Life. I mean, this is your life. You want to play roulette with it? It's your business. You feel me?
Context of white supremacy. I double checked as Dr. Rassayan was giving us the response. This is your life. Brazil, number 3 in the world for total COVID-19 cases. Only the United States and Russia have more cases, and I suspect they will probably overtake Russia in a matter of weeks, although that is, you know, now a hot spot. They, you know, have had a recent surge of cases, but I mean, that's I would just encourage racism, white supremacy is global. We've been talking about melanin dominant humans. Nowhere in the Western Hemisphere has more melanin dominant humans than the area known as Brazil. Folks should take it, especially if you're interested in racism, white supremacy, studying counter-racism. Just be mindful of what's happening in Brazil because it's very similar, not really taking it serious. You don't really have a coordinated national response to how the virus is going to be dealt with. The national figurehead doesn't really seem to be taking this very seriously and is saying silly things and is in arguments with local governors about how they're going to respond. When do we open up schools? What's the safest way to proceed? Well, you see a lot of the same things where it seems like, wow, this kind of confusion and recklessness could cost lives, a disproportionate number of
let me say let me just clarify. I mean, put this in the equation so people will know. People don't need to get coronavirus confused with the retrovirus AIDS. Okay, AIDS is the type of virus is a quote unquote acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. It has a longer period to basically degrade your body and marginalize or compromise your immune system across the board with all types of unique types of cancers and problems with digestions and pneumonia. They have specific types of cancer that you're getting with related to AIDS. This particular viral entity is a much more insidious and a much more aggressive virus than that retrovirus AIDS, which is actually dealing with it's basically making you literally turn on yourself. And, you know, your body turns on itself. Conversely, coronavirus overly inflames certain systems in your body. It confuses your body about what to do. And in the confusion, it can cause systems to fail, like kidney failure, heart failure, all right? And it can create havoc in your digestive system as well. So I'm saying that to you to say and the condition that they're talking about, the impacts to children, all right? And by the way, remember this. They told you that when they were talking about the particular manifestation of the virus in the children, they diplomatically skirting around not calling it COVID-19, they're telling you it's that PMIS, you know, that multi-system inflammatory syndrome. Because they have to be very careful about how they drop the data. Because if you start telling people that these kids are dropping from this particular viral entity specifically, then you got to start talking about what are the side effects, you know, once the people basically, you know, they thrive. What do you expect? And you heard me allude to not a little while ago, maybe an hour, 15 minutes ago in our conversation. I told you that they said that this particular virus can be transmitted via semen. But I don't know whether or not that means that the person is actually presenting active viral symptoms, because logical suggests that nobody ain't being intimate if they're ill. But they didn't clarify in the article whether or not it was after the fact, like somebody was infected and later on they transmitted the virus. But they're doing research on it. And they also did research on how this particular virus can basically be asymptomatic in a lot of people. So back to my thesis. Viruses have been around for a long time. Viruses are very, very smart. Hence me telling you about, you want to play breathing roulette? You play breathing roulette. And by the way, I did hear this from some doctors I forgot to tell you. I've been told by two different physicians. One is in New York and one is in Washington, D.C., okay? They don't even know each other in terms of conversation. These are my friends. One was told that a particular patient they thought had, first he went to the doctor, he thought he had walking pneumonia, and the doctors had brought him back and forth before they finally diagnosed him. The person in New York never did get really, really diagnosed. I'm talking about the doctors talking about this particular patient, that they were sent home, and then later on they found out from a relative that this person had actually expired at home, because they told him to go home and convalesce, and later they realized this person had expired from COVID-19. The one at Howard, oh damn, I just told you. Well, at this other hospital, the patient went back home and infected some members of his household. You feel me? I have to watch what I say in D.C. because this is a really political town. But at any rate, this is nasty, man. And I'm not asking black people to believe anything I say, or brown people, or yellow people, or even vanilla people. Go online, Google it 3 to 5 times, cross-reference the data sets. And if you cross-reference the data sets, draw your own conclusions, okay? You have the internet. You have no excuse. You can check it out on your own.
I encourage the inquisitive. Let's see. Retired firefighter in Florida, did you have a question for Dr. Rasayan? You should be with us.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, Doctor. And greetings to everyone. I just was sitting here trying to how I'm going to give my question to the doctor. I guess the best thing for me to ask the doctor is as far as to give me his best counter-racist codified opinion on the practice of, in my opinion, too many non-white black people who states that the coronavirus is not real. There are people, white people up in the air with planes spraying the atmosphere. White people didn't land on the moon. The earth is flat. What do you think, what is your opinion behind what I rate is the too much practice of what I'm hearing is called conspiracy theories? What do you think is really behind that?
In all honesty, in my most humble way, it would help me out a lot if you could condense a little bit of what you're asking me, because what you're saying to me, I can relate to everything that you're saying, but before I answer it and try to give my perspective on it, I would like, it would help me out a lot if you would crystallize sort of like succinctly encapsulate what you want me to respond to, because you have a lot of information in that comment that is also a question about these people's mentality. And I want to make sure that I'm responding to the part that is basically like the core of what you're asking. Do you understand what I'm asking you?
I think so, and I'll try to apply myself. I'm stating it from the standpoint of not saying that what that non-white person is saying is not true, but it is somewhat consistent to the point to whereas in a lot of these cases, my question would be, well, what can I immediately do about it to stop whatever, you know, this occurrence from happening? And I've been saying on the program to be as conservative as possible with this virus. In other words, as far as choices are concerned, should I just go around without a mask, or should I don't worry about the distance I have from people, or just act as though that it's not happening, or because of this? And also from the standpoint of how that influences a lot of people, and it could assist towards more and more people being harmed by it, by the virus itself, by ignoring it.
I think I get your drift now. In a nutshell, I think I get your drift now. In my opinion, I think that some of us, quote unquote, educated, melanin dominant people, we get caught up in our ability to have what I call intellectual masturbation. Intellectual masturbation, and we just bounce all our little hypotheses and theories around, like, this isn't really true, that's going on, they're doing this to distract us in the whole nine yards and that type of thing, so I'm not going to do this and I'm not going to do that, all right? And like I said earlier when I made a comment about it's best to be above ground and breathing rather than become an ancestor and see the data channeled through somebody with a shrine honoring your early demise, and saying that, you know, my uncle or my cousin didn't believe in this, and now 6 years, 7 years later, you see that, like, wow, it's true, and maybe there were some things that related to some military applications that literally did deal with population control, and maybe there was some truth to the disproportionate number of black and brown people that passed, and there were a number of vanilla people that were also casualties as a result of collateral damage. And maybe there was some sophisticated things put in this particular virus to do this and that to people, rather than saying, like, nah, man, that ain't happening, man. They're just distracting us, and they're giving us all this narrative about who's passing, but we're really not passing. They're passing. Back to me talking about intellectual masturbation. It's one thing to engage in a lot of narratives and dialogue about something, and you don't have enough data to really interpret what's going on. And so I never trusted the data. You can't even trust the data for the Center for Disease Control. If you paid attention in general, they did a special. I'll use this for an example. They did a special about Wayne Williams allegedly taking the lives of all those kids. And there were over 30 children that passed in Atlanta, probably in the early 80s up to about 82 in Atlanta. And I think they convicted him of two of them. And then some people went to sleep and they said, Wayne Williams did blah, 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 blah. And they were like, okay, so we got the person that was taking out children in Atlanta, all right? But now the story comes out, like 35-plus years later, that, hey, by the way, there was a phone call made when the people were deliberating about what to do, and the phone call came from Washington, D.C., and the judge said this. The judge said this that sat in on it. He said, and next thing you know, people were agreeing to do blah, blah, blah. So what I'm trying to say to you is, this is not something that you Monday morning quarterback, the body count on the field. You don't go, oh, by the way, man, some of those people were not really directly passing from Kuvar. The point is folk are passing. And if it's being nested in under the rubric of COVID-19, the reality is that people are passing. Whatever reason they're passing from, if they're putting all the data together, we can interpret that data later. Like I made a comment a little while ago about, I'd be a little concerned about how soon they come up with a vaccine and who they want to try the vaccine on. You follow me? I'd be concerned about that. But as far as me sitting around intellectualizing about they're not telling us the truth, ask yourself one simple question. When has the government ever told you the truth about what happens to brown and black people? The Trail of Tears is a perfect example. I don't know how many Native Americans lost their lives, and they were among the five nations of Native Americans that trusted the U.S. government. And so many of them expired on the side of the road, hence they called it the Trail of Tears, because they couldn't even pause to put their loved family members to rest in a proper Native American burial. So, and I don't know how many damn decades ago that was, or what period of time it literally happened, because I can't remember that at the moment. But the point is this, I'm not going to sit around and play with metrics and statistics to try to figure out, okay, how accurate are their data sets. Call any major city on your own, come up with a fundamental protocol. I'm a student doing research. I'm collecting a little data. I was wondering if it was possible that I could speak to a couple of your nurses on their free time. What time could I give a call? And just do your own data collection. Call a few morticians in some of these major cities and ask them, are y'all having more services than you usually have? Or you cremate more people? We play too many games with our degrees behind our names and forget that the degrees of intelligence don't have a damn thing to do with your degree. It has to do with your level of awareness. You feel what I'm saying? That's why I make a big deal out of the letters behind my name.
Right.
My mama didn't name me Dr. Coco. That wasn't part of my name.
Am I gone?
We can hear you.
No, I was just agreeing with you.
You know, so the bottom line is, brother, those kind of folks that are what I call these, I don't want to literally classify them all, but some of these folks I consider these pro-black folks, they're what I call cognitive revolutionaries. They always got an intellectual explanation to explain everything that's going on, and they come up with some kind of unique reason not to do some common sense things. Those people that engage in that kind of narrative, I don't give them my time, because particularly they might get a little bit of it over the phone, but they certainly won't get it face-to-face, because I know what a colloidal is. I've seen arguments where people get sputum flying out of their mouth. I've seen people that claim they love each other getting excited and laugh and sputum flying out of their mouth. I've seen people at the mall, guys and girls, young men, old men, people arguing with each other. And I'm going to get in a conversation with someone that just wants to intellectualize about, are they telling us the truth? When have they, when has society, when has CNN, MSN ever told us the truth about what's going on with black and brown people? Where is the data on India? Where is the data on the countries in Africa? You pay attention the next time you see any CNN news, MSNBC news, look at that that margin on the right side of your television screen at the bottom, and they will give you the metrics of all these places that are disproportionately inhabited by vanilla brothers and sisters. That's where you see the data.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the data over there like what's happening in New Delhi. They don't have the data over there what's happening in Chad, Mozambique. They won't have that data because they don't give a damn about giving you that data. And even though some people down from continental Africa will tell you very clearly that they don't have the kind of morbidity and mortality in some of those countries that we are having here. And that might be a really nice kind of like blessing in disguise or a peak of light coming from the clouds. But I want to say this on the spiritual piece before I forget not directly to your question, because I don't want to run out of time, and I don't know how Gus is going to redirect things. But there was a movie released probably, I guess, somewhere between 8 to 15 years ago called The Happening. And that movie had to do with the fact that it claimed that plants were turning on humans because humans were doing so many things in the environment, and people were passing. They were just leaving the planet. They were turning on each other and taking each other's lives. The thing about a virus is, some of these viruses, like retroviruses, they can be genetically tampered with, and you can modify their genetic material to do specific things, okay? You can do that. I want to be clear about that. But on the other hand, the thing about the virus is the virus, not only can the virus do what it's programmed to do, but the virus has the ability to reinvent how it delivers its viral material. That's one of the reasons why some of the symptoms they first told you about COVID-19 were like kind of like upper respiratory and things like that, and you get the heebles, so headaches and things like that. But then it went on to say some people wound up with diarrhea. Some people wound up with gastrointestinal distress. Some people had auditory hallucinations. Some people broke out in a cold sweat. Some people had strokes. Some people had heart attacks. Because viruses, this particular virus has the ability to seize whatever particular organ sites in your body that are most likely to have the greatest amount of inflammation. And because it's a virus, it can reinvent itself. And you're old enough to know that there was a time when they talked about the Vietnam War, and they talked about these different types of sexually transmitted diseases. And we finally moved away from calling them diseases of love, i.e. venereal, and started calling them STDs. And they started pointing out, like, damn, man, this guy must have that kind of, whatchamacallit, that you caught in Vietnam, and penicillin can't kill it. And they tell you about the MRSA virus. You have, MRSA bacteria, you have crap out here now that your antibiotics don't work on. And they're not going to work. Antivirals, they don't have an antiviral for this so-called novel virus. Because your immune system has to make the quote-unquote immune factor to deal with the virus. Hence, they call it a novel virus, which means that it has not impacted humans or man before. And they tell you about it came from a bat, some other crap. You feel what I'm saying? You got to understand the time that we live in. We live in an age of genetic engineering. We live in an age of genetic gene editing. We live in an age where the stories that were told about what happened to the Native Americans when they put smallpox in the blankets to get rid of the Native Americans, we have amplified that shit exponentially in terms of what we do to take care of perceived enemies, potential enemies, and I'm talking too much.
That's okay. You answered my question precisely.
And you being a fireman, you know, many times you've probably been in places and there were all kinds of gas that came in the air. And if you were a fireman for over 10 years, I'm sure you had colleagues that wound up with some crap that they couldn't even call, what would they call it, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, all kinds of crap happened from you smelling those gas, the things that burn in those places. It did all kinds of things to people later on. You feel what I'm saying? And
well before this pandemic. Yeah.
Precisely. And doctors didn't know how to treat it. They couldn't explain a damn thing to you about how to get rid of it. They basically told you to leave and deal with it, and they gave you some kind of analgesic to tell you to tolerate it. You feel me?
Yes, sir.
And so when you get gases coming together, create new compounds, your body doesn't know what to do with. Your body deals with it the best way it can. And when you're talking about viruses, and viruses have been around since you've had humans on the planet, since you've had life on the planet, viruses don't just affect humans, they also affect plants. So if you got that kind of signature, when I digress to make a thing to comment about the happening, I'm telling you, the only spiritual thing that I can see out of this, the spiritual, is humans will realize, like in that weird movie called the War of the Worlds, when they say bacteria took care of the aliens.
I remember.
Bacteria, viruses are taking care of the life forms on this planet. And unfortunately, hopefully that's not disproportionately impacting black and brown people, but it possibly could be. And that's what I would say. I would think that virus has been tampered with. All right? And if it's been tampered with, you can tailor it to do certain things. Okay? But I think black people are not only in the Twilight Zone and the Outer Limits. I think they have backed up to the days of Soul Train if they think that this government will ever tell them the truth about anything that happens to black people. And the reason why I reference Soul Train is Soul Train told white America that black folk had their own music, and American Bandstand had some robots on television, and everywhere in Caucasian America, they tried to copy everything that was being done on Soul Train. All right? And I mentioned that to say, we have always set the tone for anything that happens on the planet, even in terms of health, intervention, and technology. And if it wasn't for that weird movie, I call it weird because there was a lot left out, but it was very informative, called Hidden Figures, the average black person would never know that John Glenn would have never left the Earth's atmosphere if it wasn't for the brilliant minds of black women
telling vanilla people how to use their own technology and vanilla people how to use mathematics to create the kind of vectors that they needed to get something to come off the planet into the sky, orbit the Earth, and come back down on the planet within a 20-mile radius. That would have never happened if it wasn't for the brilliant mind of black people. So don't expect these same folks that lie to us about every damn thing in his version of history to tell us the truth with the metrics about what's happening with this virus and or disclose the truth about what may have originated this virus and or to tell us the truth with the level of devastation that this virus is causing today and tomorrow. We are in the twilight zone, and we have that expectation. It's just like you and I getting down and having some Lego blocks and trying to make a computer.
Hmm. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
And Alan, yeah, my brother, thank you for all the things that I'm sure you've done when you had to deal with the blazes that were fought in front of your face, and the blazes oftentimes probably perked up the side of your head, but dealing with the blazes that fought in front of your face. And you know what
you're
I mean, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, look, man, it's my pleasure talking to you guys, and like that's what happens when I'm talking on the phone too long, man. I'll start downloading information to the public that I probably should keep for myself.
We have certainly enjoyed it, Dr. Rasayan. EyesOfMaat.com. EyesOfMaat.com. No Russian roulette with your life, with your breathing. Take it serious. Man. Anything you want to get in before we wrap things up, Dr. Rasayan?
Black people need to pay attention to what they're eating. Mm-hmm. Curtail your intake of dairy. I told you before, if it's white, it's probably not right. White rice, white sugar, white flour, white salt, unless it's almost pink, comes from the ocean. And they definitely don't need to be drinking no cow milk. And you need to learn how to clean your nostrils when you come in your home if you've been around crowds. That's just a fundamental precaution. In other words, blow your nose, clean your hands thoroughly, then rinse your nose, and ideally don't use any tap water. Use a nice swab dipped in some witch hazel or maybe a drop or two of tea tree oil. Blow your nose again. Hydrate well. Exercise often. And though you may not believe the metrics, believe that you live in a world where your life is not valued, that you live in a world where you're least likely to have access to what you need to stay healthy and keep your family healthy. And whether you believe in it or not, take what's going on around you seriously. Because ghosts don't make echoes. You got to be alive to create an echo. And you can't do an echo in the first place unless you are either able to inhale and exhale. Because the vocal cords will not vibrate unless you're sending air through them. So you need to be able to breathe. That's all I got to say.
Eat well, exercise. No dairy, plant based. We were supposed to be in Toronto. Say it again. We were supposed to be in Toronto today. Cows, counter-racist yoga retreat. No dairy. We got some exercise, ate some tasty vittles, enjoyed. Too painful to even look to see what the weather in Toronto is today. But anywho, woo, much obliged.
Oh, by the way, Gus, by the way, people need to read more of what you posted about eating good, because now that you're eating this good food, it's almost like you're getting addicted to it. You feel me?
Eating well is one of the best things that you can do in terms of counter-racism, in terms of just, you know, life and health and longevity, diabetes and a lot of the comorbidities that we have been talking about are diet related. That was another reason we were really excited about doing the retreat. That's why I post the pictures that Dr. Rasayan is talking about when I make things, plant-based items in the kitchen. Like, you can eat things that taste really, really well, that are good for you, that will not have you on the comorbidity list, will not have you on the obesity list, will not have you on the diabetes list, where you can still eat lots of fruits, vegetables, legumes, beans, really help be full, not be starving. And that's another reason that I post that you don't have to eat salads every day. I did have some really good salads already this spring, but you don't have to eat salads all the time. You can have really tasty stuff. You can even have some of the comfort foods that you know, might have missed from pizza. I had pizza earlier this week and all kinds of goodies. But yeah, that's why I post, to try to encourage other people. You can eat really well so that you can feel really well and have a lot of vitality and hopefully longevity, lots of breaths, so that you can get the problem of white supremacy racism solved. That's the context I try to present it. We need lots of vitality to solve the problem of white supremacy racism. If you've been eating bad foods, chicken nuggets, Cheetos, KFC, Big Macs, I don't think we will have the vitality needed to solve this problem. I could be in error.
My brother, it's always my pleasure, and I apologize to all your listeners and the people in the archives that make these tapes if I went off on a tangent, but this is some serious stuff that's really hard to process, you know, the loss of life, be the statistics skewed in direction A or direction B. This is something to deal with because it primes the mind for people to think a certain way about people losing their lives. You feel me? It's just really, really a challenge to understand. It's just a challenge because I guarantee you, we didn't talk about it, but maybe a year from now, maybe around 10 months from now, we can talk about how people are impacted by this when we deal with Thanksgiving and the holiday season, because there's going to be a lot of depressed people floating around that may have lost a loved one to Corona, COVID-19, because those people will not be at the dinner table this Thanksgiving. They won't be there during the Christmas. They won't be there for the New Year's Eve parties. You feel me? And I guarantee you it's going to be a lot of people that are going to be missing folks that were close to them. And one thing I want to say from a couple of nurses I got, people don't know what it's like for somebody to, like, lose their life and they can't really breathe. That's why I gave you that metaphor, that analogy about somebody drowning. You know? It's a really scary way. It's a dreadful way to leave the planet. You feel me? But look, brother, it's always a pleasure. And I don't know why. I don't think I dealt with all the radical stuff that I wanted to deal with in this program, but it was my pleasure, and I'm honored that you invited me to come out and share my two cents worth. And I sincerely send out my thoughts of balance and my mantras for people that have resilience, that have lost someone in their family constellation to this phenomenon, this pandemic. And to let them know it's a reason why they remain on this side to navigate life, having lost those people that have crossed over to the other side. So I leave them with this metaphysical tidbit. Energy cannot be created. It cannot be destroyed. It only changes form. And nothing can ever remove the memories that you have of people that you enjoy experiencing life with. That's it.
Very well said, Dr. Rasayan. Visit the website eyesofmaat.com. More information. You'll see the books. OMG, The President is Black, Reality Check. Great information. eyesofmaat.com. Thank you so much for sharing a bit of your Wednesday evening. We will do it again soon. That is an important topic because there are a lot of folks grieving, and even as you said repeatedly, that grieving process has been disrupted for a lot of people. So yeah, that is absolutely an important topic to make sure that we pick up on next time around. Please stay safe. I know you will. Keep up the outstanding work. Thanks for the information that you sent. Thanks for sharing a bit of information to help us be a little bit more informed and hopefully take this serious and make quality choices to keep ourselves safe in the coming weeks, months, rest of the calendar year. We will be in touch soon. Take excellent care, Dr. Rasayan. Thank you again for sharing some of your evening.
Thank you. My pleasure. Hotel. Peace.
Dr. Niana Rasayan, I think that's his 16th time guest on the Context of White Supremacy, eyesofmaat.com. Take it serious. That's so important. Lots of folks not even able to grieve. There have been so many reports about that where they either people have, while they were transitioning, since, you know, they had the virus or suspicion that they might have the virus, so they couldn't be around anybody, so they basically had to die alone. That's, you know, a whole nother part of trauma, people not being able to kind of make their peace and be with the person in those last few minutes and all of that. And then ceremonies, they've rushed them through. I've seen a number of reports about mortuaries where people cannot, you know, come in and have the normal service and all that, which can be a part of that process and dealing with grief, where that is not allowed and everything is rushed and they're not doing it at all. And yeah, it's quite a bit to process. That's why I said lots of stress, lots of anxiety all over the world. As Dr. King said so many years ago, we continue to have some difficult days ahead. We will be here tomorrow. Dr. Still got our guest with us. Not Dr. Niana Rasayan. We'll be here tomorrow with Dr. Layla Africa, continuing to read. I have not enjoyed the book at all. It has not provided the information on food and diet that I had hoped, but we are beyond the halfway point, so that is at least something. The light is at the end of the tunnel, but that'll be our seventh installment on the nutritional destruction of black people. Normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be here on Friday, neutralizing workplace racism. Same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And again on Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, our compensatory call-in. We will revisit the 11-year-old black child who was terrorized, out checking the mail. System of white supremacy, racism, same thing that I said, looking for a confrontation, really keeping your composure. Dr. Rasayan talked about that this evening, being able to keep your composure in those moments so that you can navigate safely. I suspect it's going to be more of those type of incidents because they're not looking to follow the protocol. Oh, let me call enforcement officials and deal with this, make sure everything. No. I want to go out and put her in the chokehold. I want to strangle her. I want to go out and use my new firearm. Get some practice in. Show these coons who's boss. That's what we got. System of white supremacy, racism. Be mindful and talk to your children. That's why we had a number. I'm just glad we had parents even come on and say, man, this is not a good time to just be out joyriding and gallivanting. Take this serious. If you have offspring, get outside. Have your exercise time and all that. But this is probably not the best time to just be kicking it and hanging out. We had the situation in Brazil. Just a mask on to go to the store. They had, and he had a number in the report that we talked about yesterday, Mr. Trevet, the couple that went to the gas station, and the police ended up being called. Uh-oh, we got some bandits out here. Just be mindful. A lot of armed race soldiers, a lot of racist individuals classified as white just looking to do violence. I reckon before we sign out, the folks that had a hand up, anything you all needed to get in before we conclude? Are we satisfied for the day? We have been on the counter-racist grind. My goodness, this will be, I think, consecutive months. I haven't counted how many, but easily we will have consecutive months with 20 programs. Like, wow. Unless there is no Rona, I think we have been all right with providing constructive information during the crisis, which was not my intent at all. I was not interested in, you know, doing a whole lot of programming to talk about the COVID-19 situation. Like, I would have been very happy to prop my feet up with everybody else and do some cooking, plan to be in Toronto today or whatever else the focus was going to be. But wow, we have just been on the COVID-19 grind, which is still the counter-racist grind. The folks that dialed in, did you all have anything to share? Are you all satisfied? Everybody good?
I'm right here, Gus.
Oh, yes, sir. Dr. Rasayan with us to the end. Much obliged. I'll assume, folks, everybody's good? Nothing to get in? Grand. Grand. Much obliged for everybody who tuned in live. Hope it was worthy of your Wednesday evening. Woof, days are all blending right in together. Again, we should be here in about 24 hours. Dr. Layla Africa, segment number 7. nutritional destruction of black people. If you have questions, guest suggestions, drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. We are still going to try, see how things cooperate. It's a little tentative, but we're going to see if we can make it work for our counter-racist yoga retreat August 5th through August 9th in Washington, D.C. We'll see if we can make it happen. Hopefully things will have calmed down by later in the summer where we can at least make an attempt, but we'll have to see. Folks seem eager, so we will see if we can make it happen. Eating well, exercise is so important. Getting together for a little while and doing a little yoga, having some vegan lasagna, eggplant parmesan, maybe. I don't know. I thought of a recipe, or a menu rather, for springtime in Toronto. I have to think of a menu for summertime in D.C., but something. Summertime, we should be able to get fresh blueberries, blueberry cobbler maybe. I don't know. But tasty things, veggies, fresh fruits. Maybe we can go to the farmer's market, eat well, do some yoga, and hopefully by then we'll have a much better grasp on what all of this is with COVID-19. But any questions, inquiries, untiljustice@gmail.com. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy, taking care of that health. We do not need any of racists' poisons, narcotics, to further disrupt our brain computer and our health in general. Smoking, alcohol, all of that. Kick that to the curb. We are all about health and well-being. In addition to being sober, like I just said, we really shouldn't be doing a whole lot of going out, I think. I mean, if you got to be strategic, you got to go to work or school, do something for your offspring, you know, that's totally fine. But in terms of just being out and about, like kicking it like it's a normal springtime, no, I would not encourage that. If you're going to get a little exercise, great, but I would really be alert and mindful. 11-year-olds can't even be out and about having a good time. Can't even just go check the mail without head on a swivel. Am I going to be attacked? Be mindful. Be alert. Very dangerous times. Worldwide, very dangerous times under the system of white supremacy. If you are going out, if you got to have your essential worker paperwork, I know that should be easing in locations, your sanitizer or whatever else you're going to take with you. Do all your checks, be out and about, and then again, use logic, be alert. If you are driving, you are sober, you are buckled up, you are not on the cell phone. Again, just trying to take away the little things that we can to keep that attention off of us, to try to stay as safe as we can under dangerous conditions. Race soldiers, badge or no, apparently are on the lookout for niggers looting mailboxes, not wearing a mask. Wearing a mask, any reason, no reason at all. Be mindful. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places. Each and every time we are in contact with another black person, it has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm up. A victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.